This is the Quality News Network. 8 Marines have been charged with 13 counts of murder in the deaths of 24 unarmed Iraqi men, women, and children in the town of Haditha last year. The Marines charged today at Camp Pendleton will either face criminal charges or administrative punishment in connection with the killings. In Iraq, military commanders are telling the new defense secretary that they disapprove of President Bush's plans to increase the number of U.S. forces in Iraq. Some ground troops, however, welcome the idea. Gates also met today with top Iraqi officials and offered U.S. support for their government. However, he did not discuss specifics. A roadside bomb in Baghdad killed one U.S. soldier and wounded three others. Two Marines died in combat today in the volatile Anbar province. That brings the total U.S. military deaths there this month to 69. In Somalia, weakened government forces backed by Ethiopia continue battling with Islamic rivals despite yesterday's ceasefire agreement. Heavy casualties have been reported and U.S. troops are on the ground training Somalian government troops. In Beijing, there are signs of progress in the six-party talks intended to convince North Korea to abandon its nuclear weapons program. The North Koreans continue to insist the U.S. drop its financial restrictions, although discussions are ongoing. In the West Bank, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas announced that peace talks with Israel may begin before the end of this month. The main topic on the agenda is the release of prisoners from both sides. In London, an aide to the commander of British forces in Afghanistan has been charged with passing secret documents to Iran. The corporal was a translator to a NATO general. His trial begins after Christmas. New Jersey's governor signed legislation today giving gay couples all the rights and responsibilities of marriage allowed under state law, but not the title. And in California, the Supreme Court has agreed to hear arguments about the state's ban on same-sex marriage. No ruling is expected until next year. Massachusetts is the only state that permits full rights same-sex marriage. Across the U.S., fierce winter storms have covered many of the plains states in as much as 2 feet of snow. Major highways in 6 states have been closed. Over 5,000 people are stranded at Denver International Airport, and the governor of Colorado has declared a state of emergency in the state. The Pacific Northwest is anticipating yet another major storm. Last week, 14 people died in the worst storm in the decade, and thousands of people still remain without power. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are next.
Run for your lives. The lenders are coming. They're in the mailbox. They're overloading your email. They're on the phone. They won't be denied. The best rate, the biggest bargain, fewer points, too much information. Gold Coast Financial to the rescue. They can offload the overload and handcraft a loan that suits your needs. Are you on lender overload? Relief is just minutes away. Call Gold Coast Financial, 831-649-8757. 831-649-8757. Gold Coast Financial.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At the Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to 1 million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
In an attempt to fight causes of global warming, the EU is imposing strict new anti-pollution regulations on airlines. Domestic and foreign aircraft that exceed emission standards will be fined. EU ministers have also agreed to cut quotas in fishing days in the North Atlantic in an attempt to halt the devastation of white fish stock. The countries most affected, Britain, Denmark, and the Netherlands, have reluctantly agreed to the restrictions. For the first time, President Bush has approved raising the federal minimum wage to $7.25 an hour. The president warns that the raise must be offset by tax breaks and cuts in regulations for business. The federal minimum wage hasn't been increased for nearly 10 years. President Bush also signed into law today a major renovation of the U.S. Postal Service, the first in decades. Proponents say it will reduce rate increases. Opponents say it will primarily benefit big business. Texas legislators today introduced a law requiring public access to employee-only restrooms, but only in certain cases. Customers who are pregnant or have medical conditions must present a doctor's note to use the facilities. Maryland and Illinois have already passed similar laws. Light sweet crude is trading at $62.60 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down 43 points at 12,421, the Nasdaq was down 12 points at 2415, and the S&P 500 was down 5 points at 1418. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Christine Kendall.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Six and a half minutes after the hour, we draw nearer and nearer Christmas. It is, of course, Thursday evening here. It is the winter solstice, so a very happy winter solstice to you. Long before there were Christmases or Hanukkahs, there were winter solstice celebrations. As I noted, it's about 7 minutes after 6 p.m. here on the East Coast. It is pitch dark outside, because this is the longest night of the year. After this, it starts getting better. More daylight, more hope. And in a few months, it'll be time to get the garden in. I can understand why early cultures had a big party on this night, because, you know, by the time you get to the winter solstice, the doom and the gloom has just about gotten to the point where you can't hardly stand it anymore. That certainly applies to me. I don't know about you, but I certainly think that there's some credibility to that seasonal affective disorder syndrome. You know, the ones where that's where if it gets really, really bad, the doctor tells you to sit under a McDonald's French fry lamp for a while, just to get a little, you know, because, you know, we all need the light. So, happy solstice to you. Eggnog, mulled cider, mulled wine. Yes, Agnes, rum. Take a moment and note the changing of the seasons. Of course, the winter solstice also means the first day of winter. This is where it starts getting a little bit brutal. And brutal is apparently the word for what's going on in Denver. And the eastern Rocky Slopes. And apparently it's headed this way. So this odd little last gasp of a lovely fall that we've had here in the hills and hollers of West Virginia for the last week may be on the way out. I'm told that there is probably something that may wind up being freezing rain on its way to us. I can't wait. Snow I can handle. Freezing rain, ice, it sucks. But, you know, the nice thing is we're ready for it. If the power goes down or the wind takes the power out, we're set to keep this whole thing going. And we are thrilled to death to be able to say that. A little story for you. One of those parenting moments. I got a phone call today from the school. I hate getting phone calls from the school. It was something like, I'm your son's art teacher. Yes. Well, yesterday, we were making snowmen out of clay in art class. Mm-hmm. Lovely idea. Well, and your son And you know, whether it's Agnes talking to me or anybody else in the rest of the world, whenever it's referred to as your son, it's going to be a problem. You just know. What did our friend Jim say last night? Victory has many parents, but defeat is an orphan. Well, so is it. You know, so is it. It's the same thing with your son. We were making snowmen out of clay, and, well, your son put a little something extra on the snowman. And frankly, you know, lately I get up in the morning and, you know, start working on stuff and get ready to start the broadcast day and reading all this War on Christmas stuff, the fundies, and I just don't have a lot of stomach my fuse is a little bit, short, and, you know, I'm a sweetheart. I'm a nice guy. But I immediately moved into, you know, poke the fundy with a sharp stick mode, and I said, you mean he put a dirty part on the snowman? Well, and then, you know, it gave me a little hope, because she said, well, I wouldn't necessarily say it's dirty. I said, we're all grown-ups here. He put a penis on the snowman, didn't he? Well, yes, he did. I said, is there going to be any disciplinary action? Well, no. I just thought you needed to know. Okay, well, I said, well, I'll talk to the boy and tell him to quit making anatomically correct snowmen. Are there any Calvin and Hobbes fans out there? Are you familiar? If there are, do you remember the series? Well, first of all, the whole comic strip. There are times that I look up and I realize that Agnes and I are raising Calvin. But there's a series, and frankly, if it could have been printed in a newspaper, you know that Bill, what was his name, Bill Watterson, would have done a strip, because Bill Watterson did an entire series of Calvins based on Calvin's various and sundry horrifying designs of snowmen. You know, the snowmen in a car wreck, snowmen in a guillotine. I don't know. Was there a snowman with a horse's head in his bed? I can't remember. Snowman aliens. So, you know, it's one of those precious little moments that Agnes and I look at each other and we say, you know, someday we'll look back on this and laugh. And that day can't get here fast enough. Because, you know, in other words, he did something that you would expect a fifth grader to do. Well, yes. And, of course, I followed up, and I followed through, and I went and I did what I told her I would do. I said, boy, no more putting extras on the snowman. Dad, I didn't. No, the snowman. And see, this is where the... this is where the fifth grader kicks in. Dad, I didn't. My snowman, it had a crack in it, and I was just putting the crack back together. And you know, I get this mental image of him sort of pinching this clay back together, and how a little bit comes out, and you shape it, and then I can see the other you know, 15 or 20 fifth graders looking at it and going, ha ha, his snowman has a winky, yes, a winky. Ferg's snowman has a winky. Poor little guy. You know, there's a possibility he didn't mean to do it. But does anybody remember being fifth graders? Much older than me or younger than me, do you remember being 10? And this is middle school, the way it's delineated here. And it's like I'm reaching to find the appropriate Animal Kingdom reference for what this apparently I had forgotten. Or not forgotten, I had repressed what a horror everything from 6th to 9th grade was. And how Sharks, you know, a little bit of blood in the water and they'll start eating their own. So, yeah, we've had that talk today. No anatomically correct snowmen. And it's moments like that that you look up and you think back to when, well, not you, but I, think back to when Agnes was still carrying the little guy and we knew, you know, we were going to have a son. And we did what young parents do. We started plotting out his life for him. And in the course of plotting out his life, Agnes and I never got to the part where we took the phone call one day when he was in fifth grade from the horrified art teacher about anatomically correct snowmen. That wasn't there. I mean, no. No, what was there was, you know, the young boy genius who masters the calculus at three. Or the child prodigy musician who, is playing violin on Jay Leno at five. Or, you know, maybe he's a golfer. And there is some basis for this, a very, very good young baseball player. And, of course, a straight-A student. But nowhere on the list was anatomically correct snowman sculptor. Although that too, my sister is an art teacher and a history teacher, among other things. And I'm guessing, you know, I told her the story, and I'm guessing, I haven't heard back, but I'm thinking maybe she won't give me too much grief about it or tell me what a rotten parent I am. Because it does show an inclination toward art. And also shows that, I'm guessing, when he grows up, he's not going to stay in these hills and hollers of West Virginia. Because, you know, it'll be the torchlight procession of the Fundies to his art studio. He's got dirty snowmen in there. Bring out the artist that makes the dirty snowmen. So, you know, that's just where the day has been. Just where the day has been for me. And for us. And we had another little adventure. We've got a right-wing fundy principal down at the elementary school. And he's been a real joy. The little Christmas pageant, that was last night, wasn't it, Agnes?
No.
It seems like a thousand years ago.
Four nights ago. Hallelujah, praise the Lord.
Yeah, their Christmas song, rather than being... And this, our youngest daughter is still in the elementary school, and their Christmas song, you know, no deck the halls, no jingle bells, no. Well, I mean, it was all there, but they closed the program with a fundamentalist Christmas anthem. I mean, is that a fair description of it, Agnes?
Yes, sort of. Oh, but wait. They closed it with, you know, everyone's out trying to find the perfect present. They'll go from...
This is what they said?
Well, this is what this principal said.
Right.
They'll go from store to store to find it, even from county to county. But the perfect Christmas present that we have was that Jesus was born on Christmas Day. Wrong. But this was the perfect present, and the room just exploded in applause and... You know how people will tend to be polite. I'm not polite. This gentleman doesn't like me, and I don't care much for him. He has a wonderful wife, though.
Little League mother.
No, not a Little League mother. But it just seemed inappropriate at the moment, because it was a Christmas pageant, and Jesus wasn't born in December. Just, you know, Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays, everyone, would have sufficed.
No, everything short of an altar call. You little 10-year-old sinners, get on down here. Get on your knees. Your biggest Christmas gift is Jesus. You know, it's somewhere in the stack here from last night. Well, first of all, yeah, what can I say? I'm a little burned out right now. So, because, well, aren't you? I'm not talking about the show. I'm talking about the zeitgeist of where we are. We do, from time to time, think it's just gotten a little bit crazy here, but remember, the war on Christmas, as it is being waged by the fundamentalists, does cross oceans, borders, mountain ranges, rivers, lakes, seas. Our friend Andres in the Netherlands sent me this. Lawmakers have drawn up a resolution naming Jesus Christ as the honorary king of Poland, but have failed to win support from the country's powerful Roman Catholic Church. Huh? What? That assaults the senses. I mean, you'd think the guys that Jesus' main franchise would be okay. Honor? No, we don't want to be honorary king of Poland. We want him to be actual king of Poland, and the Bishop of Krakow will do all his talking, okay? Yeah, see? Lawmakers for the ruling Law and Justice Party and League of Polish Families, as well as the opposition Peasants Party, back the resolution, said Simon Ruman, spokesman for Parliamentary Speaker Marek Jurek. However, the proposal currently has the support of only 46 members in the 460-seat parliament, well short of the necessary 231 votes to pass. Ruman said the resolution would likely be voted on sometime after January 1st. Backing from the church in this strongly Catholic country would be crucial for building support for the proposal, but on Wednesday, several bishops criticized it and said parliament should stay out of religious affairs. Can we get one of those bishops over here to talk to Brother Dobson and Brother... Let Parliament deal with passing better laws that we need, Gdansk Archbishop Tadeusz Goklowski said. This kind of action, although it may stem from goodwill, sounds a bit like propaganda, said Bishop Tadeusz Pieronk. You know, I give religion a bunch of grief on this program, organized religion. But you know, little golf clap for the archbishops in Poland. I mean, that would have been a no-brainer for them, wouldn't it? Oh yeah, okay, that's real cool. We want all of you legislators to vote for Jesus as honorary king of Poland. And at that point in time, it would have been very easy to say things like, "For this, we had the fall of the Soviet Union and the collapse of the Warsaw Pact." But no, reason and common sense is obtaining. And let me, just for the sake of argument, what would our Congress have done in the same or a similar circumstance? Is there a Democrat or a Republican in the entire... Well, there's one that I know of. In the entire House of Representatives that would have had the nerve to stand up and say, "No, I'm going to vote no on Jesus for honorary king of America." With a very few limited exceptions, I don't think so, because every last one, the Republicans especially, the Republican congressman from Alabama and Mississippi and Georgia, "I just want you to know that we had us a resolution up in Washington, and I was proud to vote for Jesus as honorary king of America." My God, there would have been campaign posters. "Let's keep Jesus king of America. Keep Reverend Schmendrick in the House of Representatives. Do you disagree? I mean, we couldn't get the Republican Congress, 109th useless, no good, brain dead, motherless, soulless, godless 109th Republican Congress to work on real laws for all the time they spent trying to put a pillow behind Terry Schiavo's head. We couldn't get them to work on real legislation for all the time they spent trying to pass a flag-burning amendment. We couldn't get the good-for-nothing Republican 109th Congress to attend to the real needs of even our budgetary needs for all the daggum time they wasted on defending marriage. And then what happens? We got another fundamentalist minister. This one a youth minister, I might add. Was he a youth minister? No, maybe I'm crossing my word. But anyway, another fundamentalist minister has turned out to be a diddler over some stuff that he did over the course of years. So, you know, I applaud common sense that is obtained in the Polish democracy. And I applaud the common sense that has been, you know, I might differ with him on whether or not the Poles can wear little rubber thingies when they have sex to keep from having babies that maybe they can't afford to feed. But I'm right on the same page with Bishop Pieronk and Archbishop Gokłowski. Let Parliament deal with passing better laws that we need. Gee, you think? Hooray for common sense in Poland. And by the same token, the Poles take their Roman Catholicism very, very seriously. One of them was so serious about it that he became one of the most beloved pontiffs of this or any age. So that's not to say that they're a bunch of secular humanists. But they seem to have a recognition in Poland that there is a place for government and there's a place for religion and that they're not the same place. My fellow Alabamians, I just want you to know that my opponent has said repeatedly that he would not vote for Jesus Christ as honorary king of America. I want you to know that I'll vote for Jesus. I'll stand up for Jesus. Oh, glory! That is the level of silliness and stupidity to which the fundamentalists in this country have taken us. I don't know, maybe we can... It kind of makes you feel... You know, it's Christmas time, so you get your little waif-looking costume on with your little hat and your little hollowed-out eyes, and you go knocking on the parliament, the church door in Krakow. Pardon me, could we borrow a cup of common sense, please? Jesus. So, we're going to take a break. Now, jump on in on the program. Look, we're nearing Christmas. Anything you want to talk about is fair game as far as I'm concerned. It kind of always is, but, you know. But in this particular instance, I mean, I'm dealing with art issues right now. It took a little bit out of show prep, I got to tell you. This is the Head On Radio Network. The phone number is 877-443-2366, 877 the numeral 4, Head On, jump right in. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Star. But when it starts to boogie, the whole town rocks.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio
at the Head On Radio Network.
Now get back to work.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Wad Wally and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Today, all Americans are feeling the pinch of high energy prices. And this winter, the cost of heating your home could account for nearly half of your energy bill. I'm Energy Secretary Sam Bodman, with steps you can take to save money and make your home more energy efficient. First, give your home furnace or heat pump a checkup to ensure it's running as efficiently as possible. Proper insulation in attic, ceilings, floors, crawl spaces, and exterior and basement walls can save 30% on your home energy bill. And insulate the heating ducts, even in unheated areas of your house. Finally, installing a programmable thermostat will ensure you don't pay for energy you aren't using. Program the thermostat down to 65 degrees for 8 hours a day to reduce your heating bill by up to 10%. You have the power to make a difference. You can reduce your home energy bills and help our nation reduce its energy use.
For more energy efficiency tips, please visit our website at www.doe.gov or call toll-free 1-877-337-3463. This powerful savings message is provided by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Alliance to Save Energy.
Santa baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa baby, a 54 convertible to light blue. I'll wait up for you, dear Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight.
25 and a half minutes before the hour.
Think of all.
Maryland? I think so. I think so. Santa baby. Wow. Now, okay. Another one of those interesting little Christmas stories for you that I thought you might find interesting. Backing up, I read, and I printed it off, and I'm not sure what became of it. No, that's George Bush's remarks from last night. No. I found a blog entry. It was maybe over at opednews.com or something along those lines. A discussion of the... Oh, there it is. Yeah, by Mark McDonald. And you know, I'll, historical perspective is always important, because the fundamentalists and the right-wingers and the neocons and the cons in general can always be expected to ignore it. In historical perspective, that is. Well, you know, just like time and again, it's been proven that... it's been proven time and again that where marriage is concerned.
You know, we need to defend traditional marriage. Yeah.
And time and again, it's been proven that you know, up until, what, the 15th century, people weren't allowed to get married in churches because marriage was seen to be sort of dirty and nasty. And it's the same thing with Christmas. And this is opednews.com. Mark McDonald, How Did America's Founding Fathers Feel About Christmas? And it starts with a quote from Thomas Jefferson, another one of those quotes from, you know, our founding fathers created this nation on Jesus. Thomas Jefferson, in 1823, letter to John Adams, the day will come when the mystical generation of Jesus, by the supreme being as his father in the womb of a virgin, will be classed with the fable of the generation of Minerva in the brain of Jupiter. And Mark McDonald says, this holiday season, Fox News and the rest of the nation's right-wing echo chamber have decreed that the war on Christmas is one of the biggest issues facing America. Self-appointed moral watchdogs like Bill O'Reilly want to put the Christ back into Christmas and restore the holiday to its supposed proper place in our nation's history as a religious observance. And it's a lengthy little blog posting, a lengthy little article, I should say. You might, if you've got an interest in history, you'll find this quite enlightening. Among other things, Mark McDonald notes, nor was Christmas particularly important to our founding fathers or the nation as a whole. The U.S. government didn't even recognize Christmas as a holiday until 1870. Until then, and this was a real mind-blower, Congress routinely met and conducted business on Christmas Day. It was, in fact, just another work day. Truth be told, Christmas was a totally different affair during the first century of America's history. It was far removed from today's holiday, in which families gather and open presents around the Christmas tree. So how did one celebrate Christmas back in those days? Well, typically you might start off the day getting blindingly drunk. Then you'd take to the streets and approach passersby and demand money from them. If they refused, you'd beat them up. Ho, ho, ho! You might conclude the day by smashing some store windows or breaking into people's homes and stealing their food. Peruse a newspaper from the 1820s and you can routinely read of such chaotic Yuletide lawlessness. In the early part of the 19th century, Christmas was, as one historian once noted, quote, like a nightmarish cross between Halloween and a particularly violent rowdy Mardi Gras. A massive Christmas riot in 1828 led to the formation of New York City's first police force. Newspapers of the era were filled with disturbing accounts of what Christmas really was like in those days. Widespread rioting, sexual assault, vandalism, drunkenness, street violence, and general lawlessness. Most of these traditions were carried over from Europe, where, dating back to the Middle Ages, Christmas had been regarded by the wealthy classes as a safety valve for releasing the peasants' pent-up frustrations. Let them be mean, rotten, and nasty one day a year so they won't lop our rich little heads off. I appreciate the efforts of Mark McDonald. That was very enlightening. Let's go to the phones. We're joined by a new caller, Leonard. Leonard, welcome to the program.
Hello there. I was told not to call you Mr. Kincaid. So
No. We're all friends here. I'm just Bob.
Okay, Bob. I'm calling you down here from Glendale. We're right next to Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, okay.
I was talking to my old buddy Sarge, and he's got nothing but kudos. He was saying, hey, give Mr. Kincaid a call, you know, and listen, because, you know, I learned a lot on that show. I'm not on the net right now, unfortunately. I will be. But basically, I'm just calling you. I'm trying to listen as much as I can. And the thing is, I got back from Iraq in February, and what I'm doing down here in Arizona is, lately been working within my own party and with other activists, and I believe, like everybody, we need to keep taking this to new levels to try to get our soldiers out of Iraq. In other words, nonviolent means of making politicians who claim they're not even involved in this whole thing, making them very uncomfortable. So I called up my governor today. Didn't talk with her directly, and I still think she's a good governor, but we're sending, our state's sending quite a bit of National Guard, and so what I'm concerned about is that I've heard there's 380,000 more National Guardsmen that the generals are salivating over, so they're thinking about going to the two-year redeployment that the Federal Army uses instead of the normal 6 years for National Guard, and if they're, the governor should be speaking out against this, and I'm saying all governors should. You know, we've got to get in their faces and make them uncomfortable. Why? She can say that it's not her jurisdiction once the National Guard is federalized, but the ethical and moral influence her public stand would make would be tremendous.
Well, certainly. You say you were in Iraq. Is that correct?
Right. I got back with the Arizona Army National Guard 860th MP Company. I was the first soldier busted in Iraq for having a blog.
Is that you?
Yeah, I'm the troublemaker.
Okay, I've read your stuff. I'm tickled to death to talk to you.
Well, I had a lot of grammatical mistakes in there, but at the time I was more worried. I wanted to get enough sleep, and I just wanted to get down. If I wasn't going to live, I figured at least someone would know how pissed off I was to see my buddies dying for a damn lie, and then being stationed with people from Louisiana, sitting in the mess hall when on CNN. There's a television watching Louisiana citizens, American citizens, floating face first in the water and looking at the expressions on their faces, knowing there was nothing we could do. So, you know, I feel like this is a couple of my friends didn't make it back. A lot of people didn't. They're injured for life. So this is my way of doing something, but it just never seems to be enough. I'm a teacher, got my daughter now. I feel guilty because here I am with her. My other buddies had kids. Can't be back with his children, but you know, if it wasn't, like I was telling Sarge, if I wasn't right now worried about getting some medical insurance started for her and these other bills, I don't care if I get arrested. But I'm getting to the point now where our republic is at stake, and I can't believe what's happening.
This nation, and you've got a unique perspective on it, and I am excited to talk with you. You said the health of the future of the republic is at stake. That's not hyperbole at this point, is it?
Oh no. And you know, I'm in a state where we have Senator John McCain. You know, I consider him the Neville Chamberlain of the 21st century. No more torture in our time. You know, I got these concessions from the president when all along the man basically sold out. And here he is trying to look like the independent thinker. He doesn't tell people, hey, you know, we need some more soldiers, but where are we going to get them from? He said, well, we'll just keep sending the same ones. That's the National Guard and these regular Army people. And the thing is, the National Guardsmen, my fellow National Guardsmen, we can't collect our pensions if we're normal National Guard until after we turn, I believe it's around 62 now. Even after you do your 20 years, unlike Federal Army, you can. So there's just so many things going on that you just can't believe.
Well, that sounds almost fraudulent.
Oh, it is fraudulent. And, you know, they tell our young people, you know, yeah, they're going to get a chance for college education. What they don't tell you is, the way they joked with us, is on our ID card, they put 30, you know, the expiration for the ID card 35 years out and say, you're never going to get out. It's like, you know, like one of those old movies or old westerns, you see a sailor going to San Francisco and he'd get drunk and they'd knock him over the head and he'd wake up in a ship shanghaied.
Yeah.
The contracts they're drawing out are not, to me, they're not good contracts. They're not being totally, these people are not making their decisions based upon honest information that's given them. But, hey, that's what we've got right now. And ironically, the National Guard's named after the National Guard of Paris. I guess it was the Lafayette, that French soldier who came over and trained our soldiers. The New York Guard named themselves that as a tribute. And now look what's happening now. So, I just, when I hear from Sarge about people like you, and we've got Nova M Radio and Sarge, you know, it gives me hope, but I get very frustrated. I get very frustrated indeed, because, you know, here he is saying we need to send more troops.
Well, I can't wrap my mind around, I can't fathom the mindset that says that is any sort of a remedy. We've talked the last couple of nights. I understand you don't have net access and everything, but one of the things we've discussed the last couple of nights is the fact that when you're sending 35,000 more soldiers to a city of 6 million, You're trying to change the quality of a barrel of water with a drop of rain.
You're exactly right. You know, it's like Prohibition, you know, when they tried to make the consumption of alcohol illegal. Here we are going in our Humvees, maybe a squad at a time or three Humvees, through a city roughly with its suburbs of 6 million, now more, and as if we're going to change anything. The Iraqi police that I worked with, we went out of the wire almost every day. They are already trained as well as they're going to be trained. The only training we're giving them now is basically training they can use against us. Mr. Mukhtar al-Sadr, you know, I would talk to them in broken Arabic, and they would see the thumbs up. They love the guy. Even though there are factions, I'm telling you now, they're taking us to the bank. They are getting everything they can out of us. It's really sad. And the politicians already know we're sooner or later going to get out. They don't feel bad about another 3,000 lives being lost that don't need to be lost. That's why I'm desperate, you know, it's like.
Well,
I don't know what to do.
What's happening? What is happening to the soldiers who are getting rotated back and back and back and back? What is this doing to the overall the overall character of our military?
Well, basically, I mean, as you can probably imagine, it's emotionally, it's wearing them down. Marriages are broken. I'm not going to say it contributed to my, it did contribute to my divorce, but, you know, that's part of it. But, you know, they don't tell you about the suicides when we got back. Because the family members are still in the state, I'm not going to mention any names, but one of the members we got back within 2 weeks, he had killed himself because his fiance had run out on him while he was in Iraq. He wasn't there, you know. And these repeated rotations are getting rid of our best NCOs. Many a time I talked to men with 16, 17 years who were getting out. So now they want a new crop of young, brainwashable recruits. Because remember, sir, or Bob, sorry,
that's okay.
The 80% of the soldiers, I bet you it's still that way today, still believe Iraq has some connection to 9/11. The generals, these people are purposely brainwashing these young soldiers. But don't believe that crap you heard today about Gates, you know, all the soldiers wanting more. When the General Myers came over there, NBC and all these people, we couldn't go into our mess hall that day. They handpicked people, and if you want to go ahead in your career, that's what you'll know what to say. That's why you don't hear more people like me speaking, not because they're all in agreement. It's because they hang that over their heads. They told me and my whole unit, you're going to sign another secrecy statement when we got back. And if you say anything we disagree, you know, that could be what we consider illegal, we're going to be able to come back and get you.
Wait. Back, a secrecy statement?
Oh, yeah. They had to sign a second one when we got back. And that's their way of muzzling these men. These men are afraid for their families. I don't want to get into the people who died because, you know, I don't want to speak for the families, But I'm telling you, what they're doing, you know, yeah, we raised our hands up in the right air, and of course you know you're taking your life at risk when you join the military, but that's one thing. But you don't raise your hand up into the right air to be slaughtered like sheep for somebody's political career, like John McCain or King Bush or the rest of these hypocrites. You know, you don't raise your hand up in the air to be slaughtered like that. And that's
well,
what's happening
now.
Well,
you know, George Bush is notable, and I hope you've got a couple more minutes for this conversation, because this is the sort of conversation I have not been able to have, and I'm grateful. I'm so grateful to be able to have it, and I hope we can flesh things out a little bit more in further conversations down the road, Leonard.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, George Bush is constantly telling us that the sacrifice is worth it. You know, he hasn't sacrificed squat.
No, not a damn thing.
And nobody in his extended family is anywhere near Iraq. And yet, you talk about, you know, 80% may still support whatever the mission is. At what point in time do the lights go on? I'm seeing, you know, you're talking about this. Paul Rykoff is out there. God knows Lieutenant Aaron Watada has really laid it on the line.
Very good man. I strongly support him.
And just in the last week, we have discussed an open letter that showed up, I think, at LouRockwell.com from a specialist or maybe sergeant. I think his name was Short. And it was a blistering critique, and the guy is still active duty.
Well, he better watch out. That's all I can say. You know, I have friends who basically, one friend got mad at me. He helped me out a lot. He was an activist, but he claims his house was bugged. He had some people following him at the time. But, you know, I didn't ask him to do that. But these people, they're too busy spying on American citizens, you know, instead of so-called protecting the country from terrorists. They're too busy spying on you and I, you know, Americans. We're, you know, it's just unbelievable what's happening. There's so much that it's just, you know, I got mad, as you know, you read. I mean, when you come into camp that day and you have a sergeant major who never goes out saying you got to pick up cigarette butts after you're sitting across from a church where people's heads separate from their bodies, you're having a service for them, you know, and you're driving down those roads. It's like, what the hell is this all about? You know,
yeah,
picking up cigarette butts in a camp, you know, it's ridiculous. And you know, we had civilian contractors ordering us around, trying to order us around. We had a female soldier. Yeah, she messed up. She wasn't supposed to have sexual relations. See, that's the other big fallacy. You know, they send them over there, and we're supposed to be perfect saints. Well, this soldier had, I guess, sexual relations with another male soldier in her unit. She was out shoveling rocks in 110-degree weather every day in her uniform and heavy equipment and then forced to go out in her Humvee on the same stretches of road. And she did that for about 3 weeks. She was shoveling grass. That's what these people do to our young people there, Bob. It's criminal. And,
well, what happens to the mind when that goes on? What happens when you come home after having that done to you?
Well, I think if you hold it all in, you blow up. See, that's why I didn't hold it in. That's why I said, I'm not going to hold this in. If I'm going to die, I want people to know what I at least believe the truth is. You know, these people are my family. You know, in the beginning, a lot of soldiers did not like what I was saying, but by the time I left, I'll be honest, I couldn't control my emotions. The last day we were there and transferred our authority to another regular Army unit, they waited to the last second, my commander, to give me the medal that everybody else got. I don't know if he did it on purpose. And then, as soon as they called my name out, I was facing the commander. They were cheering wildly, and he says, well, what are you waiting for? Turn around and face them. I really didn't want to turn around because I had tears starting to flow down from my cheeks that my fellow soldiers had said, no, we knew you went out of the wire every day, you know, and you never try to shirk your duty. And these are the same people right now that are dying over there, 19-year-olds, 40-year-olds, family members, and why these politicians who lie. And I don't know, what to do except tomorrow I'm going to be out there in front of the State House because my teaching job, I'm out for Christmas break. I tried to call her. I said both times on both lines, hey, you have a chance to respond, make a statement, something. So I'll be out there tomorrow, and I'm going to let the rest of my Democratic Party know. I'll, you know, and say, look, you know, this is how she feels. All she has to do is make a statement.
Yeah.
She's too big and too powerful to do that.
We gotta get you wired up on the web, because what you have to say is, I am so glad you're saying it here, but it needs to go far and wide. We've got to have honest dissent. Be able to be heard here. We had a conversation last night on this program talking about the general staff, the guys with the serious hardware on their shoulder boards,
and you begin
to wonder if there's anybody on that totem pole who has the nerve to look at George Bush and say, you're screwing up. You're my boss, but I have a moral constitutional obligation to tell you, you are screwing up.
You bring up a good point. That's one of the things I've been trying to study into, because, you know, in the Army, in Iraq, when officer made colonel or put that star on their shoulder, the old joke is that general is no longer a general. That's a politician, okay? You know, so...
Oh, wow.
Unfortunately, these people, you know, I'm sure you know that to get up to that rank, you're the guy who goes to the congressional parties, the balls they hold in Washington. You get groomed. You know, it's not going to be the guy who stands up for what he believes in. You know, you're the one who gets keep getting promoted higher and higher because you keep going along with these people. There's good officers out there, and I'm not trying to say they're all bad.
No, but you go higher and higher because your nose goes lower and lower.
And they get their contracts, the military-industrial complex. You know, I, as a soldier, I sacrificed 15 years. I'll never collect my pension now because if I go back in as a PFC now with my knee, everything else, they'll see to it I never come back out. I was threatened with jail the rest of my life, but the thing is, these people are going to be able to collect consultancy contracts. They're going to go to work for a big military-industrial complex type company.
They'll show up on Fox and CNN, and
right,
they'll be
yeah.
military affairs correspondent.
And the soldiers, you know, they're just the numbers. They're statistics. They can say how much they feel and how bad. You know, like the president last night talking, you know, his voice was so, there was no emotion in the voice. It was, oh, I feel that's one of the most painful things. And then go shopping. When he said that, it was that same kind of moment when he says, I forgot, you know, these terrorists are murderous thugs or whatever, and then he hits the golf ball. Now watch this shot. That's the kind of thing, moment that was. So, you know, these politicians, Bob, I think the only thing we can do now, you know, I'm still giving the Democrats a chance, even though I got to be honest with you. I don't like what I'm seeing, but they're not officially in yet. We got to get in their faces and basically say, you know what, school board members, why are you letting recruiters come on here now? We know what they're doing to our children. We need to get in front of the state legislators. Why are you sending National Guardmen over? They're going to have to wait till the age of 62 to get their pension.
Well, it was just 2 days ago we were talking about this breaking story out of Tucson of an entire recruiting command there that got busted for hustling coke out of the trunks of their cars, Leonard.
Exactly.
National Guard, Army, regular Army, and regular Marines.
Very near to where we're at here in Phoenix, not just hop, skip, and jump away. And here we are, we're letting recruiters onto our campuses, and basically these are the people who are getting in there with our children saying, yeah, you need to go in, this is your way to make college, you know, and smuggling drugs. I'm not saying all of them, okay? I'm not saying all of them, but I'm saying that I think it's very wrong that the No Child Left Behind Act requires that people's information be given out on their children.
Yeah, and that you have to affirmatively opt out of that.
Right, and, you know, people are afraid to do that, you know, and it's just a travesty what's going on here. And these politicians, we can't wait for them, you know, they're going to wait maybe 5 or 6 months, maybe a year, and, of course, how many more people are going to die? We have to do something now. These Iraqis have been trained as good as they're going to get trained. I'm telling you right now, they need to form up their government. And Josh, they seem to be doing all right. It's not because they're well-trained. That is just an excuse. It's a total lie. I mean, you know, Bush's father was having dinner with bin Laden's brother on 9/11. I mean, these are the people who are endangering the security of the United States. The elites of this country are in cahoots with people whose interests are not the same as that of our country. Those are the ones we should be watching for. We should pass a Patriot Act guarding against them. So,
well, anyway. You know, I hope, like I said, I hope you can get wired up pretty quick. And in the meantime, in the meantime, please feel free at any time to share your thoughts, share your information, share your activism, because this is absolutely critical to what's going on now. The running theory that I have established here is that the only difference between leaving Iraq now and leaving Iraq later is the number of dead bodies that we have to account for in the later category.
You're exactly right, and thank you, and thanks to Sarge. You know, we are gonna bring these bastards to justice nonviolently, and I know I'm being watched. I'm not trying to be the little man with the big head. I've made some enemies down here. I had my taxes audited the month I left, and I don't find that coincidental. So, anyways, I will do my best to get wired up as soon as possible, Thank you so much for keeping up this fight, because they're going to try to drown out the last voices of dissent. That's what they're trying to do. And thanks to you and others like you, it's not going to happen.
Well, I sincerely hope not. That's why we're here day in and day out. And I'm pleased and I'm honored to know that we've got someone like you who has joined the fight and whom we can count on for rational discourse on the reality of what is going on there.
Thank you, Mr. Kincaid, and I will be doing my best to listen, and I'll let you know what happens tomorrow.
All right, well, please do, and anything we can do to help, let us know.
Okay, sir, thank you. Keep up the fight.
Thank you. Take care.
Adios.
Our new friend Leonard, a veteran of the Iraq War, I read his blog posts when they would make their way onto the internet here in the U.S. and God knows the United States military did everything in its power to keep that from happening. So I know from past experience that he has a lot to say, and I hope that he will get to say it. and I'm proud to know that he's saying some of it here. We've got to do the news. The phone lines are open, 877-443-2366. It's a resource, but it is only if you use it. I'm Bob.
A new one just begun. And so this is Christmas. I hope you have fun. The near and the dear ones, the old and the young. Merry, Merry Christmas.
This is the Quality News Network. 8 Marines have been charged with 13 counts of murder in the deaths of 24 unarmed Iraqi men, women, and children in the town of Haditha last year. The Marines, charged today at Camp Pendleton, will either face criminal charges or administrative punishment in connection with the killings. In Iraq, military commanders are telling the new defense secretary that they disapprove of President Bush's plans to increase the number of U.S. forces in Iraq. Some ground troops, however, welcome the idea. Gates also met today with top Iraqi officials and offered U.S. support for their government. However, he did not discuss specifics. A roadside bomb in Baghdad killed one U.S. soldier and wounded three others. Two Marines died in combat today in the volatile Anbar province. That brings the total U.S. military deaths there this month to 69. In Somalia, weakened government forces backed by Ethiopia continue battling with Islamic rivals despite yesterday's ceasefire agreement. Heavy casualties have been reported and U.S. troops are on the ground training Somalian government troops. In Beijing, signs of progress in the six-nation party talks intended to convince North Korea to abandon its nuclear weapons program have stalled. Japan's representative to the talks says, quote, "The situation remains severe and there is no prospect for a breakthrough," end quote. New Jersey's governor signed legislation today giving gay couples all the rights and responsibilities of marriage allowed under state law, but not the title. And in California, the Supreme Court has agreed to hear arguments about the state's ban on same-sex marriage. No ruling is expected until next year. Massachusetts is the only state that permits full rights same-sex marriage. Across the U.S., fierce winter storms have covered many of the plains states in as much as 2 feet of snow. Major highways in 6 states have been closed, and over 5,000 people are stranded at Denver International Airport. The governor of Colorado has declared a state of emergency in the state. 3 people were killed and a 12-year-old critically injured today when their small plane crashed outside San Francisco, according to the California Highway Patrol. No one on the ground was injured. Closing arguments today in the trial of a woman who threw her children into San Francisco Bay last year, claiming God ordered her to make a human sacrifice. Prosecutors asked jurors to use their heads, not their hearts, to determine the mentally ill woman's fate. The committee selecting a site for President Bush's future presidential library has narrowed its focus to Southern Methodist University in Dallas. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
The space shuttle Discovery is due on Earth tomorrow, but bad weather is making it difficult for NASA to decide where it should land. Rain is forecast in Florida, and high winds are expected in California. There is a backup site in New Mexico, but NASA's equipment there is less than perfect. The shuttle crew has enough fuel and supplies to last through Saturday. In an attempt to fight causes of global warming, the EU is imposing strict new anti-pollution regulations on airlines. Domestic and foreign aircraft that exceed emission standards will be fined. Third quarter economic growth slowed to a pace of 2%, according to the Commerce Department. Financial experts say the figures are not as bad as first predicted and are mostly due to the slumping housing market. Recent financial research indicates that the future U.S. economic index will continue to be strong, closely tied to analyst expectations. The Index of Economic Indicators gained 0.1% last month and is expected to continue to advance modestly in the first half of 2007. Defense contractor Raytheon will sell its aircraft business to Hawker Beechcraft for $3.3 billion, profiting $2.5 billion after taxes. Raytheon is the world's fifth largest defense contractor. Light sweet crude is trading at $62.66 a barrel. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down 43 points at 12,421. The NASDAQ was down 12 points at 2415. And the S&P 500 was down 5 points at 1418. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Christine Kendall.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Coming up on 7 minutes after the hour, this is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. And I am stunned by what I have just heard. And many, many thanks to our good friend Sarge for helping us make contact with our new friend Leonard. Sarge is on the line right now. Sarge, thank you very kindly for what you did.
Oh, hey, isn't he great?
He's amazing.
I am so tickled. Oh,
let's put this in proper terms. That's what a hero sounds like.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That's exactly right. And I want to make an announcement that he will be writing for unreportednews.net, so anytime you want to read, just scroll on over, and
excellent.
I'll start posting his articles as soon as he starts sending them.
He needs a voice. He needs a voice.
He's a great voice, and I am just tickled to death. I've talked with him on the phone several times, and he is just a wonderful young man, and he's just someone I have really been impressed with, and I'm just tickled to death that I'm able to at least give him an outlet, because like you said, he's the one that blogged. They got some stuff stirred up, so, you know.
Well, he got actively threatened by the military brass for telling the truth about what was going on over there.
Yeah, and, well, now, he's not the only new writer I've got coming aboard. Cowgirl is coming aboard, and she's going to be covering the environmental issues for us.
Wonderful.
She's going to be extremely good. I just can't wait to start reading her stuff. I think she's going to really do a great job. So I'm excited about it. Also, I wanted to, I don't know if you got my email about the Johnson story.
Yes, I did. I figured I'd let you tell it.
Okay. Well, I'll just give an overview of it. You can read it on the unreportednews.net site. Just click on my name. And if you want to see some pictures that was taken in, on October the 12th, of the Mississippi Gulf Coast, Ray has some posted on his. So just click on Ray's name, and you can see 240-something pictures that he took. So
I've already had a look at those, and, yeah, that's a very telling visual manifestation of what's going on.
It is great. Well, Ray did a good job. I've got a good team. I'm proud of my people, and they make me really humble because I'm not near as talented as they are, so that makes me feel good, you know. Because I know we're giving some really good, strong voices some good opportunities to make something happen. That's what it's all about.
It is indeed. It is indeed. But a little something good did happen down toward the Gulf Coast. You had some communication from Jim Yancey. Tell folks about it, please.
Well, okay, Mr. Johnson, I can't remember his first name. I think it was Leroy. I'm not sure, but he lost his house in Katrina, and he started rebuilding. Well, when he got almost finished, there was the wiring that was faulty, and it caught on fire, and it burned the house down, and his two grandchildren were in the house, and they perished.
Jesus.
So his whole world just went up. And he just felt like everything was gone. So what he, so what happened, Jim Yancey and the Jackson County Community Services Coalition has gone in and used some of the money that we have donated through Liberal Radio, Noble M Radio, and Head On Radio. And we, along with others, money and time, will have him a new house that he will be moving into within 10 days to 2 weeks.
That's
and so, even though we can't replace his loss of his grandchildren that he adored so much, and they are so cute. I've got pictures of them, but I couldn't post them because every time I looked at them, I just start crying. It just,
yeah,
because they were playing with cake. You know, they were having cake, and it was all over. They were just darling. And so it really, and I couldn't bring myself to post them.
No, I can understand that. But
it's, but he is, you know, he's tickled to death, and the man needed something good to happen in his life. And thanks to the listeners, thanks to the volunteers, we are able to give him something good. And right here around Christmas time, what better thing could you give him than a place to live?
Exactly.
And while I'm at it, I know it's not official yet, and we haven't announced it, but you know about it. But I want to tip people off to it, so they start
okay, go ahead
about it. But Nova M Radio, Head On Radio, and UnreportedNews.net are putting together a drive. We're going to have the 15 items that are needed most by Jim Yancey and the Jackson County Community Services Coalition, and we're going to take donations, and we're going to ship these things to Jim so the people can start getting the stuff they need, and with all of us working together, we're going to make a difference on the Mississippi coast. This idea started by Sean Ryan of Nova M Radio. He's a wonderful young man, and he came up with this idea, and then I told him, well, I think Head On would be interested in this, and he said, oh, yes, let's invite them on board, too. And then we talked to you, and you said you were very much in favor of being a part of it. And so we're really looking forward to it, and I'm going to give more details as it comes along, but I'm really excited about it, and I hope everybody will get real active, and let's get these things. One of the things he lists is money, and that you don't have to wait on. You can go to jccsc.org and make the donations, money donations.
I was just looking at it, exactly. You can do it right there on the website.
So, and Jim is one person that I guarantee you the money will be used for the people. It there won't be any of this, let's let it go down the channels and see who wants to get their share first.
Right. It'll go to exactly where it needs to be.
That's right. Jim don't play that stuff.
Right.
Your listeners and you, y'all have heard Jim before. You know he's an honest man. And so I'm just really excited, and Jim is just tickled to death, and he's just so appreciative of everything that we do to get things to him. And I just hope everybody will step up to the plate, and let's make this thing happen. I think it's wonderful.
It is indeed, and it's an opportunity to see tangible results from the good hearts and the good spirits of people who spend their time actually caring about others. And it's a chance to put our liberal, progressive mindset where our mouths are.
Yeah, it is. And I've said all along, if we're going to talk the talk, this is one way we can walk the walk.
Exactly.
If we, you know, either put your money or your merchandise or your efforts up or just walk off, because this is what it's all about right here. This is what America is supposed to be.
And one of the things is that list of 15 items, it also is worth noting, Sarge, that in some instances, and Jim has talked about this at length on the program, in some instances, it's not a matter of, you need to go buy anything.
That's right.
If you're replacing a refrigerator and the refrigerator still works, or a stove, or a water heater, all manner of things are needed in these circumstances.
Oh, you just wouldn't believe it. Even if I believe one thing, I believe you've got the list. I hope it made it to you.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that was on there that I noticed was clothes for children. You know, we got children down here who just don't have hardly any clothes at all. And if you've got old clothes that your children have outgrown, but they're still serviceable, we'll take those, you know, because these people, man, you just don't understand just what little bit will mean so much.
Well, you know, another thing, and I'm going where I'm probably not necessarily uninvited, but this is just unsolicited advice. One evening, and I don't know if you were listening that night, there was talk of how to get things to the people who need them, and it was the idea was put forward. I think it was our good friend David in Tennessee who has some experience along these lines. He said motor freight carriers, for instance. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if we're talking about appliances, it's going to be kind of tough. But motor freight carriers, in the name of the PR, who will be hauling empty, you know, hauling an empty trailer somewhere, that they can would probably leap at the opportunity,
well,
to help out with something like this. So, you know, it would be good if we could make that happen.
That's one thing that we're exploring now. Sean is working with some people in Phoenix to try and arrange it. Maybe some of the listeners that know truckers or know people that could be good in this area, sure, let us know. We'll work with anybody, because the main thing is we want to do for these people and get these people's lives back in order. This has been too long.
Well, yeah, get it back in order, and I keep... And it has stayed with me what Jim said the last time that I talked to him, that this, if this is allowed to become a long-term industry,
mm-hmm.
that the people down there are kind of screwed.
Yeah, it is.
It's got to be done, and it's got to be finished. It's got to be completed, and you've got and once it's completed, then preparations can start being made for making sure that it can't happen again.
That's right. And, well, I'm going to say this. If anyone wants to hear the story, all you have to do is go download the Randy Rhoads Show from the anniversary of Katrina. Mike Malloy was hosting that day.
Right.
And Greg Palast tells this story. There is a professor at LSU who knows of a project that can be used that will safeguard the whole Gulf Coast region from a major hurricane and will reduce tremendously the amount of damage that would be done, and the cost of it would be what it costs for 1 month of Iraq.
Oh man, you come around to that. Everything in this country now, and it's one of the reasons that I so loathe the SOBs who started this war. Everything in that is our point of reference now, isn't it, Sarge?
Yes,
everything
it is.
In this country comes around to, we could do this if we weren't in Iraq for an extra day.
Mm-hmm.
We could do this if we weren't in Iraq for an extra week or an extra month. You know, our good friend Jim got on here last night and said, in the last hour that you've been talking, we've spent $11 million in Iraq.
That's right.
I mean... Those are some pretty daggum big numbers, Sarge. Sit back, take a pencil to it. You've been on here since about 8 minutes after the hour. It's 12 minutes. Let's see. That's what is it? $3 million?
Yeah.
$1.5 million?
Yeah, and that's why
is gone since you and I have been talking.
Right, and that's what Leonard and I were talking about before he called you. I told him, Leonard, you know, the thing that bothers me is that we have just ignored the fact that we're wasting all of this money. It's not resonating with the American people, and somehow or another we've got to keep calling these officials and telling them, look, we're watching you guys, and we're not going to play with you guys anymore. You guys do what we sent you up there to do. You vote to stop this craziness.
Well, it really does bring home what Dennis Kucinich is talking about. I know I keep referencing him, but he's in the election now, and I'm behind him, and he's got good points, and I'm gonna make sure that there's a reminder out there. That's why he's talking about defunding the war. We want to prevent the next Katrina. We got to defund the war and able to do it.
Hey, we are just throwing our country away with this Iraq thing, and only an idiot would waste any more money with this thing. There is no way we can win that. Hey, you heard Leonard. Good God Almighty. There's a man that knows firsthand. He's been there. He's seen it. Listen to the man.
Yeah.
Well, Bob, I'm going to let you go.
And all right.
Look, once again, I want to thank you for everything that you do. Head On is making a difference. The lead, in the way that Head On and Nova M have accepted each other and are willing to work together, I think it's wonderful. I think this is what the liberal community is really about, and I so greatly appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate everything you're doing, Sarge. You're there, and you're talking to people every day, and you're facilitating a lot of this, and that's why it's happening. So, you know, don't sell yourself short either, brother.
Well, I'm just doing what I think any American ought to do, really.
I know, but a lot of Americans aren't.
Well, thank you, Bob.
Take care, Sarge.
Good one.
Bye now. And we'll roll on to our good friend Bob calling from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Hello, my friend.
How are you?
Hello, Sarge down there in Mississippi. I miss you, son. I miss you, you know. But I listen as much as I can. But, you know, tonight, I can't hear you on the Internet because it's buffering too bad. I'll get a few seconds, it cuts out, and I think they're messing with us, Bob.
You know, we've had some of those issues lately, and you're not the first person who's mentioned that, and it's weird because we've gotten to the point where we're actively monitoring virtually every packet that goes out of here and heads up to the streaming servers.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what's going on. I don't know if it's a fun. I don't know.
There's a bunch of piglicans out there. Re-piglicans. They ain't even just pigs. They're re-pigs, you know. And they're eating it. They're just screaming and squealing and crying because January's coming and they know the Democrats got the House and the Senate. Yes.
Yeah, they've got a lot to. They've got. Well, I don't. Look, I mean, okay, this is my little moment of cynicism, Bob. I don't know how much they've got to worry about. We talked last night about Harry Reid saying, "Well, you know, maybe we can send 30,000 extra troops."
I know. But hey, Bob, if these Democrats, these dinos, like I like to call them, Democrats in name only, don't do their job. There's 2 years, and they're on their butts, and we'll hire another bunch, and we can do it. We are the people. We are the people, Bob.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what Sarge is trying to say down in Mississippi. We are the people. They are.
Well, down there, Sarge and everyone else have waited for it to get done by its traditional method. It hasn't been done. It has not gotten done.
You know, those people in Mississippi and those people on the Gulf Coast and all those people in New Orleans and all those people that were hit so bad by Hurricane, what was that Lady Bird called it? You know?
Yeah.
Katrina or no? She said Karina.
Yeah, Karina. Karina. Hurricane Karina.
Hurricane Karina. She didn't even know the name of the hurricane that has devastated our nation. And, you know, that's the problem with these people. All Republicans do not understand that we are the people. They are not. They are just pigs. Pigs, Bob. Pigs with their snouts in a trough. Pigs
Yeah, with their front and front feet in, and trying to get the back ones in too.
Right, so nobody else can get in there while they're dumping in their own food. You know, they're dumping in it and eating it. And now they can eat it, Bob, because if they do not back down, I guarantee that guys like Sarge and I, we ain't backing down. We're coming on strong, and we're bringing on our brothers, our sisters, and all the people of this earth, all the people of Iraq, all the people of Iran, all the people of all the nations that take these fascist Republican, and I mean Republican, they're not even Republicans anymore, they're Republicans, every one of them with their SUVs and their smart mouth and their stupid jowls. And
their little yellow ribbons on the back of the car that was made in China by a 12-year-old slave laborer. Yeah, sure.
There have been many, many times I've been driving down the freeway looking at them things, thinking targets of opportunity. And, you know, one of these days, maybe we can use them as a target of opportunity. And when you see it, shoot it. Don't even talk to it. Just kill it and get rid of it, because it's worse than a mad dog. It's a Republican. It is a Republican, and it's headed by George W. Bush.
Yeah,
excuse me.
I know.
Almost
no, I know. I know. It makes your head hurt after a while, because everything this nation has been through. You know, the great convulsion of our Civil War, when we talked about being a union. When was the last time you heard George Bush refer to this nation as a union?
Before that, they said United States
are. Afterward,
and now after that, they said the United States is, and we are a nation. And those people in Mississippi, those people on the Gulf Coast, are our people, and we owe them a debt of gratitude for being the fellow citizens that they are, and for all that they suffer, we should all suffer with them, Bob, and feel in our hearts on this special holiday that the Republicans have turned into some filthy. I mean, I'm so disgusted with Christmas that I don't even put up a Christmas tree. I do not, and I will.
They've taken it all away. Everything that's good and decent and warm and kind and joyous in this country has been taken away by either a religious fundamentalist or a neocon or a Republican strategist.
Let's call them what they are. They're Nazis. They're neo-Nazi fascists, Bob. They are fascists. And
they certainly are behaving like it, aren't they?
They are fascists in the most strict term. Every Republican is a fascist, and I would love for one of them to tell me that I'm a liar, because I'll send him to his Jesus in a heartbeat, without sweat, and I won't even think about the rock pile. I'll dump his carcass under so he can rot and be forgotten. I just hate them that much.
Well, it's not like they haven't worked awfully hard to earn it, Sarge. Or the Bob.
Johnny.
Sorry, Bob. No,
Johnny.
No.
They used to call me Johnny.
Yeah, I know, but you're Bob to me. That makes it more confusing, because it's Bob.
Yeah.
That makes it more confusing, because it's Bob and Bob.
You're Bob and I'm Bob, and there's so many Bobs around here. Everybody's bobbing up. And
yeah, one of these days we're going to revive that old. Bob Newhart show where you play Hi Bob, and every time they say Bob, yeah.
You know what, Bob?
What?
You know what I want them Republicans to do?
What's that?
Just bob up and kiss my.
Yeah, there's another Bob.
Yeah.
All right. Bob. Well, listen, Bob. I know they've taken a lot of the fun out of it, and they've taken the joy out of Christmas.
They've taken the love out of it, because my love goes to you, Agnes, your family, and our hope for her. Speedy recovery and her health, and love to you all, and to Dad, salute. And for this Christmas, I salute you too.
Well, we salute you, Bob.
Have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful Christmas, and do it in the true joy of the season. You know,
that's what we're going to try to do. You know,
way that Jesus tried to teach.
We focus on having a big, a big family meal.
Yep.
We try to be better than usual to each other. I'm trying to negotiate a Christmas Day ceasefire between the three siblings. You know, one day a year, we're just not going to fight with each other, okay? Because that's their job, you understand.
We won't fight today. Everybody behaves and just shows what we really are. And, hey, we're human, yeah, and we make our mistakes, and we get angry, and we do stupid things.
Yeah, and my
but I'll tell you what. If a Republican crosses my doorway on Christmas, he's going to be...
All that goodwill toward men's just going right out the door, isn't it?
Absolutely. I'll put a 9 to his head, and I'll drop him on the doorstep.
All right, Bob. We're going to roll on, okay?
Merry Christmas to you, and to all a good night.
And all God's chilling said amen. Take it easy.
Love you much.
Later. Bye-bye. Now. See, that's what's happened all across this country. Right-wingers, conservatives, Republicans, these people who wrap themselves in the flag and thump their Bibles and have never understood what allegiance to the flag or reading the Bible is all about, have done everything in their power to destroy everything that is good about this country. What I said with Sarge obtains earlier. You want to work on America's roads? We can't work on the roads because we're spending our road money in Iraq. You want to hurricane-proof the Gulf Coast? We can't hurricane-proof the Gulf Coast because we're spending our hurricane-proofing money in Iraq. You want to be sure that your kids can at least get loans to go to college? Well, we're spending our student loan guaranteeing money in Iraq. You want to see public works projects all over this country to shore up the crap that's crumbling and do so at good paying prevailing wage jobs? Well, we're hard pressed to do as much of it as we possibly could because we're spending our prevailing wage public works money in Iraq. You want to make sure that a person who works 40, 60, 80 hours a week can go to the doctor when he or she is sick? We're spending our universal health care money in Iraq. New construction types. Priced a sheet of plywood lately? Priced drywall, priced concrete. The free market is in Iraq. It is not. It's not a stretch of the imagination or even of facts to recognize that almost everything that is good and decent in this country has been sacrificed on the altar of Iraq. It has affected the automotive industry. It has affected every industry where people who used to work there are an empty place because they're in Iraq. Were you listening to Leonard a little bit ago? What he said about rotating the National Guard, that they're thinking about going to a 2-year rotation instead of 6? Sick of being told about sacrifices being worth it. I'm tired of people telling us that we can sacrifice who have never sacrificed themselves. What has a Bush ever sacrificed? Now go shopping! Is that his only answer? Yesterday, it was go shopping. The day or two after 9/11, it was go shopping, fly to Disney World. You see, this is the mindset of a spoiled child of privilege who has never known want, who has never known hunger, who has never known a cold night. Or a night without $100,000 or $500,000 roof over his head. This is the consequence of that. So, as a consequence of that, how important does it become that we make absolutely certain that Harry Reid knows that we will not tolerate him playing footsie with the Bush administration on sending 35,000 more people to the meat grinder? How important is that? How important does it become to get behind Dennis Kucinich as he calls from both a moral high ground and a pragmatic, intelligent, common sense high ground for us to defund the war so we can start talking about all the things we can't do right now because the money is going to Iraq? And what is the money doing there? Nothing. Nothing. Every penny that we have spent in Iraq gets blown up, shot at, destroyed, stolen. At this point, it's almost beyond being describable as a hemorrhage or a leech. It has pulled just about everything out of this nation that we have to offer. Meanwhile, the parties, I hear, are pretty good at Goldman Sachs. Because, you see, while all of this is going on and our tax dollars are being sucked into Iraq, your retirement is funding $53.4 million Christmas bonuses for the head man at Goldman Sachs.
Oh, see, he's a communist. He's a liberal. He don't want nobody to have no money.
Horse hockey. Christmas bonuses are traditional. But a $53 million Christmas bonus? Jiminy. What's that going to do? Is that going to go back into the economy? Or is that just a glaring, stark example of the utterly, absolutely screwed up priorities that this nation has embraced? I wonder what the tax rate is on that $53 million Christmas bonus. I got news for you. It ain't what it ought to be. What would you do? Anybody, please help me here. What do you do with $53.4 million? You put it in investments and you let it make little dollars. What do you do? We've had this conversation before. Because most of us who live in lottery states engage from time to time in that little fantasy of, if I won the lottery. Well, the chairman of Goldman Sachs just won the lottery. And he won the lottery and has been paid in funny money based on the fact that, and this was something that was brought up by Dr. Bill O'Brien earlier this afternoon, and it just sort of grabbed me and threw me around the room. He said when he was a younger man, he would put away money in savings with a passbook savings account. And it paid him a decent rate of return. And he said, but later on, as the Republicans gained more and more control of the engines of commerce in this country, his passbook savings account became functionally meaningless. And now, you know, whether it's your 401k, you know, this was the point he made, and this is why I wish, I hope, if you have never listened to Dr. Bill O'Brien, I hope that you will begin. Because it'll changes the way you look at stuff. You're sitting there listening, and he is so intelligent and so genial and so patient and such a teacher. And you're listening, and all of a sudden you go, well, damn. Because you see, as he pointed out earlier today, you and I, we have no force in the market. You know, maybe you can put $100 into an account every couple of weeks, maybe. That's chicken feed to a gang that gives bonuses of $53.4 million. It really is. But there's nowhere else for you to put that $100 every couple of weeks. The market has been so thoroughly manipulated that banks have no interest in putting forward standalone passbook savings accounts that pay a meaningful rate of return. The only way you can get any kind of a rate of return is to get into the craps game that the big boys play and risk everything you have. Everything you have. Your 401k, it's part of a bigger chunk of change that's being, even as we speak, put on a roulette wheel somewhere in the world market. And some high paid fund manager is going, black, no, but red, no, odd, oh, nuts. And for a variety of reasons, there are a lot of people that don't want to participate in the stock markets because there's a lot of immorality in the stock markets. You know, you may have real moral misgivings about the way that Coca-Cola treats organized labor in Colombia. But you know what? Your 401k may be elbows deep in Coca-Cola. You may not feel very good about Nike using slave labor, but your 401k may like Nike just fine. And there is literally nowhere that a person of conscience can go to get away from the market and still get any kind of return on his or her money. You going to buy U.S. savings bonds? Guess where your money's going? Going to sign up for the payroll savings plan and watch that $25 or $30 a week go down the Iraqi rat hole? That's another thing we need. We need liberal, progressive money management, where people who can only put $10 and $15 a week into it can know that their $10 and $15 a week isn't doing any harm, and yet may somehow provide for their future. Sort of the reverse of the Grameen Bank in Bangladesh. The guy who just won the Nobel Peace Prize, or the Nobel Prize, I forget what, because he was willing to loan poor people $200. And he almost never had a borrower go into default. But that $200 loan could let a woman buy a sewing machine so she could set up and sew in her home and take care of her children and not have to work in a sweatshop. We need a sort of the moral opposite of that for people of conscience in the United States so that we don't have to play with people who think that that $53 million is okay, that's okay money. We need to set up. We need some sort of a process set up where we can opt out of that system. You think? I tell you what. Let's take a break. Your phone calls are more than welcome. You know, we're moving toward Christmas. Christmas wishes. What would you wish for yourself or for this nation this Christmas season? I'm Bob Kincaid.
Ting-a-ling too. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you. Outside the snow is falling and friends are calling you. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you. Giddy-up, 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 let's go. Let's look at the show. We're riding in a wonderland of snow. Giddy-up, 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 it's grand, just holding your hand. We're gliding along with the song of a wintry fairyland. Our cheeks are nice and rosy and comfy, cozy are we. We've snuggled close together like two birds of a feather would be. Let's take that gold before us and sing.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable. And I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hello, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, go to irs.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. That's irs.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484.
Christmas Hustle? Somebody get me a Kiana shirt with a sailboat on it. No, a Kiana shirt with Santa Claus on it. How would that? Yeah, okay. Let's go straight to the phones and talk to our good friend Jim. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
My turn?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was just listening to a couple of things that were being said. And, you know, I understand that some people are pretty upset because some of the employees at Goldman Sachs and Canopy Sterile and some of the other agencies on Wall Street or brokerage firms have done quite well. But, you know, that's just the world in which we live.
It's another banner year for Scrooge and Marley.
Well, there is no doubt that Wall Street and greed is its profit. But, however, since we do live in that society and an economy driven by Wall Street, any broker, and that's what they've always told me, you never invest any money in that kind of thing unless you can afford to lose it.
That's true.
And that's the name of the game with stocks.
Well, and that's the way it's supposed to operate, isn't it, Jim? You do not invest anything that you can afford to lose, just like you don't go to Vegas with money you can't afford to throw away.
Well, exactly. Now, what's happened here, what gets me... It gives me a case of the fantasy is that these people have consciously channeled money away from traditional retirement programs that are much more comprehensive than these KIOs and 401ks.
Right.
And they deliberately channel the money in their direction with the 401k. And of course, you don't have to participate. You can opt out. You know, they can't make you participate in a 401k program.
No, you can stick it under the mattress, but that's not, you know, that's not going to be effective.
But I mean, you know, basically, for example, like this started, that I remember, the CEOs started in the late 70s, early 80s.
And then they morphed into the 401k.
Yeah, and then they really got, the first thing it started, Bob, was when the federal retirement system transitioned from CSRS to what they call FERS, the Federal Employee Retirement System.
Right.
And that's when federal employees had to start contributing to the Social Security Trust Fund, and they were given the option of contributing what was called a thrift savings program. And you had three funds you could invest in, and a D fund, the C fund, the F fund. And, of course, the Z fund was very conservative, and the other two were a little more risky. But, I mean, regardless of what you invest in, you're going to invest in something and in some operation in this country that's going to step on somebody's toes or it's going to be unjust to somebody in some way. There's no way you can avoid it.
Well, you know, it reminds me, Jim, there's if you drive down, you know, you're a West Virginian like me.
Don't say that because I'm really not. I'll be honest.
Nah, you've been here too long. You're stuck with us, Jim.
No. That's okay, but we'll just.
Now, careful, or we'll have to make sure and send you a straw hat and a corncob pipe.
No. That's okay. I'm a citizen of the world. Okay.
All right, but if you go down into the Kanawha Valley and you listen to the radio, especially the talk radio station down there, you will eventually hear an advertisement for a person who offers Christ-centered investing services.
Okay.
And he promises that nothing, you know, that he will invest your money for you, and nothing he invests in will be anything that Jesus would object to.
But now, he doesn't bother with places, things like Hoyblind cocktails or American tobacco or whatever.
Yeah, House of Seagram's is apparently off the market, and so is Altria, you know, the former Philip Morris.
Well, hey, listen, if you believe this guy, I've got a bridge up on Verrazano Narrows I want to sell you.
Well, I ain't buying because I don't believe it.
Oh, Lord. Well, I mean, what companies is he, and I'm not laughing at you or him, okay? But please.
No, I'm laughing at him. I'm laughing at the people who invest with him, the simpletons.
Well, what companies does he say he uses?
Well, he won't. I mean, it's strictly a 60-second radio commercial, but it's, you know, there's some fundamentalist hymn playing in the background, and we worry about the things. You know, so I guess maybe he doesn't. You know, I guess he doesn't let any of his investors' money go into Bill Frist's Healthcare Corporation of America, because Healthcare Corporation of America does more abortions than any other hospital corporation out there.
Pat Robertson selling stock. You never can tell. Has that particular entity gone into a on the market with common care or preferred?
I don't think so, but some of the companies that he is heavily invested in certainly are. Barrick Goldstrike Limited, things like that, yeah.
Sure, he has a good advisor, good financial advisor. That's important.
Yeah, and I'm sure he does, you know, Pat Robertson doesn't let the, you know, niggling little things like morals get in the way of his attempt to make a buck either.
No. But, you know, you really, honestly and truly, in this world in which we live, if you participate in any type of investment scheme, no matter how modest, your money is going to be placed in entities that...
objectionable stuff.
Well, yeah, that's just...
You know, and that was the thing that grabbed me about what Dr. Bill was saying earlier today, and that is...
Dr. Bill and I discussing this, didn't you?
No, I wasn't producing at the time. I was in another room. But the part that I heard him in his introductory remarks discussing, you know, you can't get out. There's no way you can avoid it. You know, because, and that's part of the reason the Dow is at 12,000 is that it is propped up with a bunch of phony baloney mandatorily invested retirement funds. That's how they got it to 12,000.
Well, you know, when they begin to transition from the traditional pension plan, which was much more comprehensive and much fairer, and had less of the tax burden, now these IRAs and these 401ks, people think that they're just making money like crazy, but when the tax ban comes, his hand's going to be sticking way farther out.
Oh yeah, it looks like a whale of a bargain when they're telling you when you're investing in it early on. Oh, look at all the money you're going to have, but it's real easy to forget about the fact that the tax man is going to take a big chunk.
Well, that's unfortunately that's just the way it is. You know, it's like that movie Wall Street and that character Gordon Gekko.
Yeah, greed is good.
Where greed is good, and that's what our young people are being taught. And it's a far cry from what they were taught when my generation was coming along. And that was
oddly enough, though, Jim, it seems that generation you're discussing is rejecting a lot of that.
I don't know. You've got pretty much your brightest and best that are wanting to go into MBAs and Dr. Bill said this afternoon they want to go in not into things that will help people at large, but go into things that can enhance their own personal portion, and you know they're much more financially savvy than people of my generation were at their particular age, and they are, just like they're much more computer savvy because computers weren't around in those days. You know, I mean, I'm staring at two right now, and so I mean, basically.
Oh, I'm surrounded by the little things.
Yes, exactly, and you know, and I love it. I wish they were around 40 years ago when I was in my early 20s.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's not the case. I'm glad I led to see the advent of the information technology. But nonetheless, these are a different breed of young people, and they have a different breed of values. And some of the values maybe aren't too good, and some of them are very self-serving. But that's just part of the world in which we live. And, you know, unfortunately, I just don't like to stand on the seashore and command the tide not to come in because I know I'm going to get my feet wet.
Well, I understand some of that, but I don't know necessarily that the analogy entirely obtains, because social change can be manifested by committed people. I mentioned Coca-Cola in particular. If you look at Coca-Cola worldwide, that is one nasty bunch of human beings. Well, at the University of Michigan. Activist students forced the University of Michigan Board of Trustees to utterly divest itself of all Coca-Cola investments, all the way down to even offering Coca-Cola products on campus.
What have they done that's so bad? They have companies and sweatshops or something in other nations.
They've had union organizers in Colombia taken out and murdered, Jim. They're a tremendous polluter in developing nations like India. They're monstrous.
Oh, I didn't know their sins were that grievous. I really didn't know.
If you go and do a little research, you'll find it's one of America's most beloved brands.
50 million times a day at home and work are on the way.
Exactly.
Well, there you go. It's a long way from Candler's drugstore, right?
You're darn right. And it's a long way from the little old ladies I grew up with who had a bottle of Coca-Cola and an aspirin every morning. Because they said it just perked them right up.
I bet it did. Through that recipe, that formula. Of course, I mean, I think that was before your time.
Well, it was, but the little old ladies never gave up on it. That was the point.
Well, you know,
it was the placebo effect in living color.
Right, but you know, it's very difficult to immerse, to completely separate yourself from.
It is, but it can be accomplished. You know, it was accomplished in a number of. It was a big part of what wound up pushing South Africa away from apartheid.
But you know, one thing about this, now here's something else. Now, this effort to green things and clean things up, that can be very profitable too.
Yes.
And it can be extremely, you know, if you get on the ground floor of some of these things. I mean,
well, again, I mentioned last night the German, the huge German corporation Siemens is, I believe, opening a new windmill factory in, off in Iowa somewhere.
Right.
And you know what? They're gonna sell everything they can produce because forward-thinking people are going to look toward alternative energy sources because we can't count on Appalachian Power and the Southern Company forever and ever and ever.
No. Well, look at Imus's wife. I mean, she's into this green, clean stuff, and it's being used at Hackensack University Hospital. And none of these elements in their clean products have anything that's in any way harmful to you. Whereas if you look right underneath your kitchen sink, you're going to find a number of chemicals in there that are extremely corrosive and very harmful.
Well, yeah, and well, look at laundry detergent. I read something about this not too long ago. It is possible to make laundry detergents that are utterly non-invasive and non-toxic on an environmental basis. But the American people... have yet to figure out what they're doing with their Tide and their Biz and their Bold and their Gain, and have yet to demand that of the market of the manufacturer, while other countries have done so, and it's not costing them an extra nickel.
That's true. Well, you know.
Some of it really is activism. I understand your point about commanding the Tide not to come in, but in some instances, it's not so much that. As actually getting somebody to the seashore in the first place.
Well, I would hope that with the passage of time and the improvement of chemistry and the improvement of products and things like that, that you're going to have a transition towards that, and people are going to demand, you know, that they have products that are not harmful. And there are going to be opportunities for people to invest in things which are not as onerous as, I guess, the Coca-Cola people who do nasty things in South America, of course. I mean, you know, we've done so many nasty things in South America. That's just, like, you just have to put that one pot, it'll just have to stand in line behind 600 other things, true?
Exactly.
I mean, you know,
yeah. Exactly. But committed people have got to get behind this kind of stuff, and support the companies that are willing to go forward with that kind of thinking.
But what I would like to see happen is this, and I really hope that this can happen, and I don't know if it ever will. I would like to see a transition from the 401k back to a more traditional pension program. And, you know, that can happen. We're talking about basically the distribution of wealth. I mean, you know, you look at cities like New York and Washington, they don't produce any wealth there. All they do is distribute it, okay, or funnel it. And I would hope that in those, well, I'm just maybe living in a fool's paradise, but I would like to see a return to a more traditional pension plan that was originally envisioned back in the 1930s return. But I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon because these people have found a golden goose, and therefore with this golden goose, and you know, and another thing, and I'm not trying to get off subject here, the credit card industry. I mean, God, go to Wilmington, Delaware. The only thing they produce there is plastic. Okay.
Yeah, well, and the same goes for
some of the same thing goes for
South Dakota because they deliberately crafted their credit card laws to draw credit card companies to the state.
Right, and you know that's one of the reasons that Biden who's from Delaware, voted for that bankruptcy bill.
Because he was told to.
He engineered it. He offered it. Right. And, you know, that's the reason that you get behind in your electric bill and you have a MasterCard or a Visa, you're going to find your APR going up from a reasonable 8.9 or 6 point something to 19.2. You know?
Yeah.
And that's I guess what I'm trying to say is that's not interest. I call that vigorous. That's what the mob calls it. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of vigorous that feeds the Wall Street coffers, too. It's not interest. It's vigorous.
Yeah, the vig. I've heard that term.
Well, it's a mafia term. You know, that basically, you know, you borrow $20 from somebody, and 2 weeks later, you got to pay for paying $40. I mean, what kind of interest is that? So they don't even call it interest. They call it vigorous.
Right.
So, but anyway, I've rambled on enough, and I've cared enough, but that's the thoughts that I cared.
Yeah, but, you know, we get some very enlightened rambling from you, Jim.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that intensely, and I just hope that things can, you know, people can only use so much and spend so much and eat so much, eat at a certain level of what am I trying to say? They can only eat so well and live so well that I just hope that they don't think that they can take it with them, because I think some of them are possessed the idea that they can. I don't know.
Well, yeah, somehow vast amounts of money insulate them from having to contemplate the fact that there is a day coming when the money will do them no good.
This is quite true. This is quite true.
Well, Jim, have yourself a wonderful evening.
And the same to you, sir. Goodbye.
Take care. Bye now. It is 7 past the hour. I wanted to make sure that Jim got to complete his thoughts, because there are valid questions in this culture as to whether or not we individually can make a difference. You know what? We individually can't. We working together, however, well, you know all that business about levers and fulcrums and stuff, right? This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Peace on earth, can it be? Years from now, perhaps we'll see.
Our
see the day of glory.
See the day.
Living peace on earth
when we come.
This is the Quality News Network. 8 U.S. Marines will face either criminal prosecution or administrative punishment after being charged today with 13 counts of murder in the deaths of 24 unarmed Iraqi men, women, and children in the town of Haditha last year. The Marines were charged today at Camp Pendleton. The new Secretary of Defense met with U.S. military commanders and top Iraqi officials in Baghdad today. The group specifically discussed what should and should not be America's next move to gain control over sectarian violence and bloody insurgent attacks. Meanwhile, a roadside bomb in Baghdad killed one U.S. soldier and wounded three others. Two Marines died in combat today in the volatile Anbar province. That brings the total U.S. military deaths there this month to 69. In Beijing, six-nation talks intended to convince North Korea to abandon its nuclear weapons program have now stalled. North Korean officials remain resolute in keeping their nuclear program alive until an agreement is made to lift economic sanctions. In Somalia, weakened government forces backed by Ethiopia continue battling with Islamic rivals despite a recent ceasefire agreement. New Jersey's governor signed legislation today giving gay couples all the rights and responsibilities of marriage allowed under state law, but not the title. And in California, the Supreme Court has agreed to hear arguments about the state's ban on same-sex marriage. No ruling is expected until next year. Massachusetts is the only state that permits full rights same-sex marriage. Across the U.S., fierce winter storms have covered many of the plain states in as much as 2 feet of snow. Major highways in 6 states have been closed. Over 5,000 people are stranded at Denver International Airport, and the governor of Colorado has declared a state of emergency. A forklift truck driver faces murder charges in connection with the deaths of 5 prostitutes in eastern England over the last few weeks. 48-year-old Stephen Wright was arrested Monday. A second suspect taken in for questioning earlier this week has been released. And the committee selecting a site for President Bush's future presidential library has narrowed its focus to Southern Methodist University in Dallas. That's the alma mater of First Lady Laura Bush, although a final decision has not been made on the actual site. You're listening to the Quality News Network. A look at science and business news is next.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I'm here to ask you a question. Has one of your friend's relatives sent you a DVD from another country and you discover that it won't play in your machine? At the Duplication Connection, we can convert any country-coded DVD to play in the U.S. We can also convert your DVDs to play in any country on the planet. Call me at the Duplication Connection at area code 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Don't dread the Fed. Sure, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. Seems like it happens every day around noon. But does that affect your home loan? Not necessarily. Talk to the pros at Gold Coast Financial. They can help you bid your dread of interest rates goodbye. Don't wait another minute. Start living in your dream home while sending your interest rate nightmares packing. Gold Coast Financial. 649-8757. 649-8757. Gold Coast Financial. 831-649-8757.
The space shuttle Discovery is due back on Earth tomorrow, but bad weather is making it difficult for NASA to decide where it should land. Rain is forecast in Florida, high winds expected in California. The shuttle has enough fuel and supplies to last through Saturday. In an attempt to fight causes of global warming, the European Union will impose strict new anti-pollution regulations on airlines. Both foreign and domestic aircraft that exceed emission standards will be fined. Third quarter economic growth slowed to a pace of 2%, according to the Commerce Department. Financial experts say the figures are not as bad as first predicted and are mostly due to the currently slumping housing market. Recent financial research indicates that the future U.S. economic index will continue to be strong, closely tied to analysts' expectations. The index of economic indicators gained 0.1% last month, expected to continue to advance modestly in the first half of 2007. Defense contractor Raytheon will sell its aircraft business to Hawker Beechcraft for $3.3 billion, profiting $2.5 billion after taxes. Light sweet crude oil at $62.70 a barrel, that's down $1.02. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 43 points at 12,421. NASDAQ down 12. The S&P 500 down 5. And there's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis. It's now 5 minutes.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Coming up on 14 minutes after the hour. Head on for a Thursday night as we roll toward Christmas. Now, of course, there will be no program on Monday. That's Christmas. There will be a program tomorrow night, however, and we're going to do our second year in a row Christmas tradition of Agnes and my little ones reading the Christmas story. Just somehow seems appropriate, and like I said, we'll go forward next year and the year after doing the same thing, and we'll actually be able to hear them grow up. And maybe 15, 20 years down the road, it'll be a different little voice. And Agnes and me will be Granny and Granddad. You just don't know. But I want to share something with you right now. A little reading. It's a favorite Christmas time Yuletide sort of tale of mine. I thought you might like it as well. I've gotten a lot of positive feedback on things like this. So I wanted to share with you a short story. It was always one of my mother's favorites, and I think a lot about my mother this time of year, because she loved Christmas. Short story by Truman Capote, A Christmas Memory. Imagine a morning in late November, a coming of winter morning more than 20 years ago. Consider the kitchen of a spreading old house in a country town. A great black stove is its main feature, but there's also a big round table and a fireplace with two rocking chairs placed in front of it. Just today the fireplace commenced its seasonal roar. A woman with shorn white hair is standing at the kitchen window. She is wearing tennis shoes and a shapeless gray sweater over a summery calico dress. She is small and sprightly like a bantam hen, but due to a long youthful illness, her shoulders are pitifully hunched. Her face is remarkable, not unlike Lincoln's, craggy like that and tinted by sun and wind, but it is delicate too, finely boned, and her eyes are sherry-colored and timid. "Oh my!" she exclaims, her breath smoking the window pane. "It's fruitcake weather." The person to whom she is speaking is myself. I'm 7. She is 60-something. We are cousins, very distant ones, and we have lived together as long as I can remember. Other people inhabit the house, relatives, and though they have power over us and frequently make us cry, we are not, on the whole, too much aware of them. We are each other's best friend. She calls me Buddy, in memory of a boy who was formerly her best friend. The other Buddy died in the 1880s when she was still a child. She is still a child. "I knew it before I got out of bed," she says, turning away from the window with a purposeful excitement in her eyes. "The courthouse bell sounded so cold and clear, and there were no birds singing. They've gone to warmer country. Yes, indeed. Oh, Buddy, stop stuffing biscuit and fetch our buggy. Help me find my hat. We've 30 cakes to bake." It's always the same. A morning arrives in November, and my friend, as though officially inaugurating the Christmas time of year that exhilarates her imagination and fuels the blaze of her heart, announces, "It's fruitcake weather. Fetch our buggy. Help me find my hat." The hat is found. A straw cartwheel, corsaged with velvet roses out of doors, has faded. It once belonged to a more fashionable relative. Together we guide our buggy, a dilapidated baby carriage, out to the garden and into a grove of pecan trees. The buggy is mine, that is, it was bought for me when I was born. It is made of wicker, rather unraveled, and the wheels wobble like a drunkard's legs. But it is a faithful object. Springtimes we take it to the woods and fill it with flowers, herbs, wild fern for our porch pots. In the summer we pile it with picnic paraphernalia and sugar cane fishing poles and roll it down to the edge of a creek. It has its winter uses too, as a truck for hauling firewood from the yard to the kitchen, as a warm bed for Queenie, our tough little orange and white rat terrier who has survived distemper and 2 rattlesnake bites. Queenie is trotting beside it now. 3 hours later, we are back in the kitchen hulling a heaping buggy load of windfall pecans. Our backs hurt from gathering them, how hard they were to find, the main crop having been shaken off the trees and sold by the orchard's owners, who are not us. Among the concealing leaves, the frosted, deceiving grass, crackle, a cheery crunch, scraps of miniature thunder sound as the shells collapse and the golden mound of sweet, oily, ivory meat mounts in the milk glass bowl. Queenie begs to taste, and now and again my friend sneaks her a mite, though insisting we deprive ourselves. We mustn't, buddy. If we start, we won't stop, and there's scarcely enough as there is for 30 cakes. The kitchen is growing dark. Dusk turns the window into a mirror. Our reflections mingle with the rising moon as we work by the fireside in the firelight. At last, when the moon is quite high, we toss the final hull into the fire and with joined sighs watch it catch flame. The buggy is empty. The bowl is brimful. We eat our supper, cold biscuits, bacon, blackberry jam, and discuss tomorrow. Tomorrow, the kind of work I like best begins. Buying. Cherries and citron, ginger and vanilla, canned Hawaiian pineapple, rinds and raisins and walnuts and whiskey, and oh, so much flour, butter, so many eggs, spices, flavorings, while we'll need a pony to pull the buggy home. But before these purchases can be made, there is the question of money. Neither of us has any. Except for skinflint sums, persons in the house occasionally provide, a dime is considered very big money. Or what we earn ourselves from various activities, holding rummage sales, selling buckets of hand-picked blackberries, jars of homemade jam and apple jelly and peach preserves, rounding up flowers for funerals and weddings. Once we won 79th prize, $5, in a national football contest. Not that we know a fool thing about football. It's just that we enter any contest we hear about. At the moment, our hopes are centered on the $50,000 grand prize being offered to name a new brand of coffee. We suggested AM. And after some hesitation, for my friend thought it perhaps sacrilegious, the slogan AM, Amen. Tell the truth, our only really profitable enterprise was the Fun and Freak Museum we conducted in a backyard woodshed 2 summers ago. The Fun was a stereopticon with slide views of Washington and New York lent us by a relative who had been to those places. She was furious when she discovered why we'd borrowed it. The Freak was a three-legged biddy chicken hatched by one of our own hens. Everybody hereabouts wanted to see that biddy. We charged grown-ups a nickel, kids 2 cents, and took in a good $20 before the museum shut down due to the decease of the main attraction. But one way or another, we do each year accumulate Christmas savings, a fruitcake fund. These monies we keep hidden in an ancient bead purse under a loose board, under the floor, under a chamber pot, under my friend's bed. The purse is seldom removed from this safe location, except to make a deposit or, as happens every Saturday, a withdrawal, for on Saturdays I am allowed 10 cents to go to the picture show. My friend has never been to a picture show, nor does she intend to. I'd rather hear you tell the story, buddy. That way I can imagine it more. Besides, a person my age shouldn't squander their eyes. When the Lord comes, let me see him clear. In addition to never having seen a movie, she has never eaten in a restaurant, traveled more than 5 miles from home, received or sent a telegram, read anything except funny papers and the Bible, worn cosmetics, cursed, watched, wished someone harm, told a lie on purpose, let a hungry dog go hungry. Here are a few things she has done, does do. Killed with a hoe, the biggest rattlesnake ever seen in this county, 16 rattles. Dip snuff secretly, tame hummingbirds, just try it, till they balance on her finger. Tell ghost stories. We both believe in ghosts. So tingling they chill you in July. Talk to herself. Take walks in the rain. Grow the prettiest japonicas in town. Know the recipe for every sort of old-time Indian cure, including a magical wart remover. Now, with supper finished, we retire to the room in a faraway part of the house where my friend sleeps in a scrap quilt-covered iron bed painted rose pink, her favorite color. Silently, wallowing in the pleasures of conspiracy, we take the bead purse from its secret place and spill its contents on the scrap quilt. Dollar bills, tightly rolled and green as maybuds, somber 50-cent pieces, heavy enough to weight a dead man's eyes, lovely dimes, the liveliest coin, the one that really jingles, nickels and quarters worn smooth as creek pebbles, but mostly a hateful heap of bitter-odored pennies. Last summer, others in the house contracted to pay us a penny for every 25 flies we killed. Oh, the carnage of August. the flies that flew to heaven. Yet it was not work in which we took pride. And as we sit counting pennies, it is as though we were back tabulating dead flies. Neither of us has a head for figures. We count slowly, lose track, start again. According to her calculations, we have $12.73. According to mine, exactly $13. I do hope you're wrong, buddy. We can't mess around with 13. The cakes will fall. I'll put somebody in the cemetery. Well, I wouldn't dream of getting out of bed on the 13th. This is true. She always spends 13ths in bed. So to be on the safe side, we subtract a penny and toss it out the window. Of the ingredients that go into our fruitcakes, whiskey is the most expensive as well as the hardest to obtain. State law forbids its sale, but everybody knows you can buy a bottle from Mr. Ha Ha Jones. And the next day, having completed our more prosaic shopping, we set out for Mr. Ha Ha's business address, a sinful, to quote public opinion, fish fry and dancing cafe down by the river. We've been there before and on the same errand, but in previous years our dealings have been with Ha Ha's wife, an iodine dark Indian woman with brassy peroxided hair and a dead tired disposition. Actually, we've never laid eyes on a husband, though we've heard that he's an Indian too, a giant with razor scars across his cheeks. They call him Ha Ha because he's so gloomy, a man who never laughs. As we approach his cafe, a large log cabin festooned inside and out with chains of garish, gay, naked light bulbs, and standing by the river's muddy edge under the shade of river trees where moss drifts through the branches like gray mist, our steps slow down. Even Queenie stops prancing and sticks close by. People have been murdered in Ha Ha's cafe. Cut to pieces. Hit on the head. There's a case coming up in court next month. Naturally, these goings-on happen at night when the colored lights cast crazy patterns and the Victrola wails. In the daytime, Ha Ha is shabby and deserted. I knock at the door. Queenie barks, and my friends call, "Miss Ha Ha, ma'am! Anyone to home?" Footsteps. The door opens. Our hearts overturn. It's Mr. Ha Ha Jones himself, and he is a giant! He does have scars. He doesn't smile. No, he glowers at us through Satan-tilted eyes and demands to know, "What do you want with Ha Ha?" For a moment, we are too paralyzed to tell. Presently, my friend half finds her voice, a whispery voice at best. "If you please, Mr. Ha Ha, we'd like a quart of your finest whiskey." His eyes tilt more. Would you believe it? Ha Ha is smiling, laughing too. "Which one of you's a drinking man?" "It's for making fruitcakes, Mr. Ha Ha, cooking." This sobers him. He frowns. "That's no way to waste good whiskey." Nevertheless, he retreats into the shadowed cafe and seconds later appears carrying a bottle of daisy yellow unlabeled liquor. He demonstrates its sparkle in the sunlight and says, $2. We pay him with nickels and dimes and pennies. Suddenly, as he jangles the coins in his hands like a fistful of dice, his face softens. "Tell you what," he proposes, pouring the money back into our bead purse, "just send me one of them fruitcakes instead." "Well," my friend remarks on our way home, "there's a lovely man. We'll put an extra cup of raisins in his cake." The black stove, stoked with coal and firewood, glows like a lighted pumpkin. Egg beaters whirl, spoons spin round in bowls of butter and sugar. Vanilla sweetens the air, ginger spices it. Melting, nose-tingling odors saturate the kitchen, suffuse the house, drift out to the world on puffs of chimney smoke. In 4 days, our work is done. 31 cakes, dampened with whiskey, bask on windowsills and shelves. Who are they for? Friends. Not necessarily neighbor friends. Indeed, the larger share is intended for persons we've met maybe once, maybe not at all. People who've struck our fancy, like President Roosevelt, like the Reverend and Mrs. Lucy, J.C. Lucy, Baptist missionaries to Borneo, who lectured here last winter, or the little knife grinder who comes through town once a year, or Abner Packer, the driver of the 6 o'clock bus from Mobile, who exchanges waves with us every day as he passes in a dust-clouded whoosh. Or the young Whistons, a California couple whose car one afternoon broke down outside the house and who spent a pleasant hour chatting with us on the porch. Young Mr. Whiston snapped our picture, the only one we've ever had taken. Is it because my friend is shy with everyone except strangers that these strangers and merest acquaintances seem to us our truest friends? I think yes. Also, the scrapbooks we keep of thank yous on White House stationery, time-to-time communications from California and Borneo, the knife grinders' penny postcards, make us feel connected to eventful worlds beyond the kitchen with its view of a sky that stops. Now a nude December fig branch grates against the window. The kitchen is empty. The cakes are gone. Yesterday we carted the last of them to the post office where the cost of stamps turned our purse inside out. We're broke. That rather depresses me, but my friend insists on celebrating with 2 inches of whiskey left in Ha Ha's bottle. Queenie has a spoonful in a bowl of coffee. She likes her coffee chicory flavored and strong. The rest we divide between a pair of jelly glasses. We're both quite awed at the prospect of drinking straight whiskey. The taste of it brings screwed-up expressions and sour shudders. But by and by, we begin to sing. The two of us singing different songs simultaneously. I don't know the words to mine, just, come on along to the Darkstown Strutter's Ball. But I can dance. That's what I mean to be, tap dancer in the movies. My dancing shadow rollicks on the walls, our voices rock the chinaware. We giggle as if unseen hands were tickling us. Queenie rolls on her back, her paws plow the air. Something like a grin stretches her black lips. Inside myself, I feel warm and sparky as those crumbling logs, carefree as the wind in the chimney. My friend waltzes around the stove, the hem of her poor calico skirt pinched between her fingers, as though it were a party dress. Show me the way to go home, she sings, her tennis shoes squeaking on the floor. Show me the way to go home. Enter two relatives. Very angry. Potent, with eyes that scold, tongues that scald. Listen to what they have to say, the words tumbling together into a wrathful tune. A child of 7, whiskey on his breath. Are you out of your mind? Feeding a child of 7. Must be loony. Road to ruination. Remember Cousin Kate, Uncle Charlie's brother-in-law. Shame. Scandal. Humiliation. Kneel. Pray. Beg the Lord. Queenie sneaks under the stove. My friend gazes at her shoes. Her chin quivers. She lifts her skirt and blows her nose and runs to her room. Long after the town has gone to sleep and the house is silent except for the chimings of clocks and the sputter of fading fires, she is weeping into a pillow already as wet as a widow's handkerchief. Don't cry, I say, sitting at the bottom of her bed and shivering despite my flannel nightgown that smells of last winter's cough syrup. Don't cry, I beg, teasing her toes, tickling her feet. You're too old for that. It's because, she hiccups, I am too old. Old and funny. Not funny. Fun. More fun than anybody. Listen, if you don't stop crying, you'll be so tired tomorrow we can't go cut a tree. She straightens up. Queenie jumps up on the bed where Queenie is not allowed to lick her cheeks. I know where we'll find real pretty trees, buddy, and holly, too, with berries as big as your eyes. It's way off in the woods, farther than we've ever been. Papa used to bring us Christmas trees from there, carry them on his shoulder. That's 50 years ago. Well, now I can't wait for morning. Morning. Frozen rime lusters the grass, the sun, round as an orange and orange as hot weather moons, balances on the horizon, burnishes the silvered winter woods. A wild turkey calls. A renegade hog grunts in the undergrowth. Soon, by the edge of knee-deep, rapid-running water, we have to abandon the buggy. Queenie wades the stream first, paddles across barking complaints at the swiftness of the current, the pneumonia-making coldness of it. We follow, holding our shoes and equipment, a hatchet, a burlap sack, above our heads. A mile more of chastising thorns, burrs and briars that catch at our clothes, of rusty pine needles brilliant with gaudy fungus and molded feathers. Here, there, a flash, a flutter, an ecstasy of shrillings remind us that not all the birds have flown south. Always the path unwinds through lemony sun pools and pitch-black vine tunnels. Another creek to cross, a disturbed armada of speckled trout froths the water round us, and frogs the size of plates practice belly flops. Beaver workmen are building a dam. On the farther shore, Queenie shakes herself and trembles. My friend shivers, too, not with cold, but enthusiasm. One of her hat's ragged roses sheds a petal as she lifts her head and inhales the pine-heavy air. "We're almost there. Can you smell it, buddy?" she says, as though we were approaching an ocean. And indeed, it is a kind of ocean. Scented acres of holiday trees, prickly-leafed holly, red berries shiny as Chinese bells. Black crows swoop upon them screaming. Having stuffed our burlap sacks with enough greenery and crimson to garland a dozen windows, we set about choosing a tree. "It should be," muses my friend, "twice as tall as a boy, so a boy can't steal the star." The one we pick is twice as tall as me. A brave, handsome brute that survives 30 hatchet strokes before it keels with a creaking, rending cry. Lugging it like a kill, we commence the long trek out. Every few yards, we abandon the struggle, sit down, and pant. But we have the strength of triumphant huntsmen. That and the tree's virile, icy perfume revive us, goad us on. Many compliments accompany our sunset return along the red clay road to town, but my friend is sly and noncommittal when passers-by praise the treasure perched on our buggy. "What a fine tree, and where did it come from?" "Yonder way," she murmurs vaguely. Once a car stops, and the rich mill owner's lazy wife leans out and whines, "Give you 2 bits cash for that old tree." Ordinarily, my friend is afraid of saying no, but on this occasion she promptly shakes her head. "We wouldn't take a dollar." The mill owner's wife persists, "A dollar my foot, 50 cents, that's my last offer. Goodness, woman, you can get another one." In answer, my friend gently reflects, "I doubt it. There's never 2 of anything." Home. Queenie slumps by the fire and sleeps till tomorrow, snoring loud as a human. A trunk in the attic contains a shoebox of ermine tails, off the opera cape of a curious lady who once rented a room in the house, coils of frazzled tinsel gone gold with age, 1 silver star, a brief rope of dilapidated, undoubtedly dangerous candy-like light bulbs, excellent decorations as far as they go, which isn't far enough. My friend wants our tree to blaze like a Baptist window, droop with weighty snows of ornament. But we can't afford the made-in-Japan splendors at the 5 and dime, so we do what we've always done, sit for days at the kitchen table with scissors and crayons and stacks of colored paper. I make sketches, and my friend cuts them out. Lots of cats, fish, too, because they're easy to draw. Some apples, some watermelons, a few winged angels devised from saved-up sheets of Hershey bar tinfoil. We use safety pins to attach these creations to the tree as a final touch. We sprinkle the branches with shredded cotton, picked in August for this purpose. My friend, surveying the effect, clasps her hands together. "Now, honest, buddy, doesn't it look good enough to eat?" Queenie tries to eat an angel. After weaving and ribboning holly wreaths for all the front windows, our next project is the fashioning of family gifts. Tie-dye scarves for the ladies. For the men, a home-brewed lemon and licorice and aspirin syrup to be taken at the first symptoms of a cold and after hunting. But when it comes time for making each other's gift, my friend and I separate to work separately. Secretly. I would like to buy her a pearl-handled knife, a radio, a whole pound of chocolate-covered cherries. We tasted some once, and she always swears, I could live on them, buddy. Lord, yes, I could, and that's not taking his name in vain. Instead, I am building her a kite. She would like to give me a bicycle, she said so on several million occasions. If only I could, buddy. It's bad enough in life to do without something you want. But confound it, what gets my goat is not being able to give somebody something you want them to have. Only one of these days I will, buddy. Locate you a bike. Don't ask how. Steal it, maybe. Instead, I'm fairly certain that she is building me a kite, the same as last year and the year before. The year before that, we exchanged slingshots. All of which is fine by me, for we are champion kite flyers who study the wind like sailors. My friend, more accomplished than I, can get a kite aloft when there isn't enough breeze to carry clouds. Christmas Eve afternoon, we scrape together a nickel and go to the butcher's to buy Queenie's traditional gift, a good, gnawable beef bone. The bone, wrapped in funny paper, is placed high in the tree near the silver star. Queenie knows it's there. She squats at the foot of the tree, staring up in a trance of greed. When bedtime arrives, she refuses to budge. Her excitement is equaled by my own. I kick the covers and turn my pillow as though it were a scorching summer night. Somewhere, a rooster crows. Falsely, for the sun is still on the other side of the world. Buddy, are you awake? It is my friend calling from her room, which is next to mine, and an instant later she is sitting on my bed holding a candle. Well, I can't sleep a hoot, she declares. My mind's jumping like a jackrabbit. Buddy, do you think Mrs. Roosevelt will serve our cake at dinner? We huddle in the bed, and she squeezes my hand. I love you. Seems like your hand used to be so much smaller. I guess I hate to see you grow up. When you're grown up, we'll still be friends, I say always. But I feel so badly, buddy. I wanted so bad to give you a bike. I tried to sell my cameo Papa gave me. Buddy, she hesitates as though embarrassed. I made you another kite. Then I confess that I made her one, too, and we laugh. The candle burns too short to hold. Out it goes, exposing the starlight. The stars spin at the window like a visible caroling that would slowly, slowly daybreak silences. Possibly we doze. But the beginnings of dawn splash us like cold water. We're up, wide-eyed and wandering, while we wait for others to waken. Quite deliberately, my friend drops a kettle on the kitchen floor. I tap dance in front of closed doors. One by one, the household emerges, looking as though they'd like to kill us both. But it's Christmas, so they can't. First, a gorgeous breakfast, just everything you can imagine, from flapjacks and fried squirrel to hominy grits and honey in the comb. Which puts everybody in a good humor, except my friend and me. Frankly, we're so impatient to get at the presents, we can't eat a mouthful. Well, I'm disappointed. Who wouldn't be? With socks, a Sunday school shirt, some handkerchiefs, a hand-me-down sweater, and a year's subscription to a religious magazine for children, The Little Shepherd. It makes me boil. It really does. My friend has a better haul, a sack of satsumas. That's her best present. She is proudest, however, of a white wool shawl knitted by her married sister, but she says her favorite gift is the kite I built her. And it is very beautiful, though not as beautiful as the one she made me, which is blue and scattered with gold and green good conduct stars. Moreover, my name is painted on it. Buddy. Buddy, the wind is blowing. The wind is blowing, and nothing'll do till we've run to a pasture below the house where Queenie has scooted to bury her bone, and where a winter hence Queenie will be buried too. There, plunging through the healthy, waist-high grass, we unreel our kites, feel them twitching at the string like sky fish as they swim into the wind. Satisfied, sun-warmed, we sprawl on the grass and peel satsumas and watch our kites cavort. Soon I forget the socks and hand-me-down sweater. I'm as happy as if we'd already won the $50,000 grand prize in that coffee naming contest. My, how foolish I am, my friend cries, suddenly alert like a woman remembering too late she has biscuits in the oven. You know what I've always thought, she asked in a tone of discovery and not smiling at me but a point beyond. I've always thought a body would have to be sick and dying before they saw the Lord. And I imagined that when he came, it would be like looking at the Baptist window, pretty as colored glass with the sun pouring through such a shine you don't know it's getting dark. And it's been a comfort to think of that shine taking away all the spooky feeling. But I'll wager it never happens. I'll wager at the very end a body realizes the Lord has already shown himself. That things as they are, her hand circles in a gesture that gathers clouds and kites and grass and queenie paw and earth over her bone, just what they've always seen was seeing him. As for me, I could leave the world with today in my eyes. This is our last Christmas together. Life separates us. Those who know best decide that I belong in a military school. And so follows a miserable succession of bugle-blowing prisons, grim, reveille-ridden summer camps. I have a new home, too, but it doesn't count. Home is where my friend is. And there I never go. And there she remains, puttering around the kitchen, alone with Queenie. Then, alone, Buddy dear, she writes in her wild, hard-to-read script. Yesterday, Jim Macy's horse kicked Queenie bad. Be thankful she didn't feel much. I wrapped her in a fine linen sheet and rode her in the buggy down to Simpson's pasture where she can be with all her bones. For a few Novembers, she continues to bake her fruitcakes single-handed. Not as many, but some. And of course, she always sends me the best of the batch. Also, in every letter, she encloses a dime wadded in toilet paper. See a picture show and write me the story. But gradually, in her letters, she tends to confuse me with her other friend, the Buddy who died in the 1880s. More and more, 13ths are not the only days she stays in bed. A morning arrives in November, a leafless, birdless coming of winter morning, when she cannot rouse herself to exclaim, "Oh my, it's fruitcake weather." And when that happens, I know it. A message saying so merely confirms a piece of news some secret vein had already received, severing from me an irreplaceable part of myself, letting it loose like a kite on a broken string. That is why, walking across a school campus on this particular December morning, I keep searching the sky as if I expected to see, rather like hearts,
a lost pair of kites hurrying toward heaven. Truman Capote's A Christmas Memory. My mother was the first to expose me to that story. And she always loved the scene where Buddy and his friend go to Mr. Ha-Ha's to get the liquor. Because fruitcake making was a part of the tradition that went on both in this house and in the houses they called home before that. And my mother had recollections of going to find a bottle of liquor to soak the fruitcake with. Because, of course, the booze preserves the cake. Keeps it from drying out and getting skanky and so forth. Because of the alcohol. But that was one of her favorite stories. And so, in a way, somehow it's a matter of reconnecting. And that really is what goes on at this time of year, isn't it? And I suspect that beyond whether or not we call it Christmas or Yule or Noel, I suspect that it's that sense of connection that makes the season what it is. When we see the little ones ripping into the packages, we're remembering being little ones ripping into the packages. And it's like a reflection in a hall of mirrors. Because for quite some time, to one degree or another, that sort of thing has been going on the same day, year after year after year. And we remember those who are not with us, and the joy and the grace and the goodness that they brought. And frankly, you don't have to have any particular symbology to make the day be that day of remembrance. And so that's what makes it, that I think is where the real specialness is. And it's simple stuff. And it's not the big shiny things. It's the pervasive sense of goodwill that might last a day. And so, you know, we'll be back at it tomorrow night. Like I said, we'll have the little ones read the Christmas story. And, you know, do you have, I don't know, maybe this is too public a forum for the sharing of such private things. But do you have memories of this season, of loved ones, of special times that make the day more than just a holiday or a day off or a day of commercialized whatever? If you'd like to reach out tomorrow evening, if you'd like to make contact with thousands of people all over this nation and this globe, we'll be here to do that. Share what you wish. Share what you will. Share your good will. Share your hopes. Because while we may take a day or so out of every season to focus, out of every year to focus on particularly, And while during the rest of the year we may rant and rave and carry on and get incredibly frustrated and very angry and sometimes heartbroken, at the bottom of all of that, the reason we get so frustrated, the reason we get so heartbroken, the reason we get so terrified and frightened of the things we see going on about us in this world, the reason all of that happens is because at the end of the day, we would like for it to be so very different. We would like to be shoulder to shoulder in solidarity and harmony and good spirits with every other American. And we would like to have a political world that ceases in its unceasing attempts to divide us one from another. We would like to create an America where our isolation is no longer of benefit to someone or something, but that our spirit of community is the very essence of our ability to go forward with the dream that is America. So whatever thoughts, whatever hopes, whatever wishes you may have tomorrow, I certainly hope you'll share them with us and with the thousands and thousands of people who share their time listening to this program. And I thank you for sharing that time with us again this evening. My darling, my wife, Agnes, beautiful and talented, produced the program this evening. Brian Reznor announced. John Fox in Sydney, Australia, is the engineer of the Head On Radio Network. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams, the archives, and the podcasts of all the programs on this network. And he does so tirelessly. And he does so with great good humor and goodwill. And I thank you, those of you who remember him with your donations and your support. And for those of you who can't do that, I thank you for the goodwill that you send back in his and our directions. Peter Godbold at Godbold Computer Services of Tallahassee, Florida, is our IT professional. He makes sure all the computers behave themselves. All the programs on the horn come to you as a direct result of the hard work of thousands of members of the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters and Millwrights who get up every day and build the American dream. And in building that American dream, they're supporting this network and helping to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR. It's all for you.